This week on This Week in Google, Stacy has the week off. We'll explain why. Jeff Jarvis and Aunt Pruitt are here. We'll talk about Elon Musk. He's really dragging his heels with Twitter. Now they're giving him the fire hose. Will that be enough? New York State passes the first ever right to repair law for electronics. And rewriting Wall Street's rule book. SEC is trying to fix the meme stock problem. You'll be interested in hear how they propose doing it. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 667, recorded Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. Scuds off the bow of Sullivan. This Week in Google is brought to you by HackerRank. It's time to reboot your technical interviews with HackerRank's easy-to-use tools. With a pre-made question library, code playback, and built-in whiteboard, you'll be conducting better technical interviews and instantly identifying the right talent. Go to HackerRank.com/twig to start a better tech interview free today. And by Melissa. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. And by Hover. Whether you're a developer, photographer, or small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. Go to hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover everything but pretty much everything but Google. But we'll get a little Google in here, I bet. Joining us right now, hands-on photography host, the master of ceremonies in Club Twit, and a general all-around good guy, Clemson fan, Aunt Pruitt. Hello, Aunt.
Hello, Mr. LaPorte.
Is that a Clemson cockroach over your left shoulder? What is that?
That is actually a Clemson ant.
Ant.
Clemson Tigers.
Oh, I get it.
Ant.
Oh. Is that ant because of you, or is that actually their mascot?
Look here, sir. How dare you?
Wouldn't the tiger eat the ant? I'm just saying.
How dare you?
Or step on it? Okay. Very cute. A Clemson ant. I love it. I get it. A visual pun, ladies and gentlemen. Also yeah, here.
That was a care package.
That's very sweet. So some listeners say that to you or family.
Yes.
Listener. Very nice. Thank you, listeners. You guys are great. We have a great audience. I just love them.
Indeed.
Also here, the Leonard Tao Professor for Journalistic Innovation at
Craig Newmark.
Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Hello, Mr. J. Good to see you.
Doctor. How are you?
I am well. I am very well. You know who's not well? Stacy Higginbotham. She couldn't be with us.
Bless her heart.
Today, bless her heart, because she's in Puerto Rico rescuing her daughter?
Well, Stacy, having just gotten over her 11-day bout of COVID, then tweeted, guess where I have to go? She tweeted that she was going to Puerto Rico because her daughter was there on a field trip, I guess.
A school trip.
And,
wow.
Came down with it, and so Stacy has to go and isolate with her. I don't know if they're back yet. I have no idea what the latest is. I just saw that tweet and thought, oh, geez.
Ay, caramba.
So to speak.
So I'm sorry that Stacy's not with us, but she's of course doing the most important job she does.
Yeah, well, I think she was going to be gone anyway at a conference or something, wasn't she?
Oh, okay,
yeah, that's right. She's supposed to be at a conference.
Okay,
too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So everybody lost Stacy this week.
Child is still positive after day five. She tweets, "This variant ain't messing around, y'all." But she's still blogging. She's still writing about stuff. She wrote about Apple's HomeKit announcements and Matter. She was very excited about that. I was really looking forward to having her on to talk about that, but she'll do it next week if we can get her back for daughter. Mm-hmm. And her daughter's fine, right? She just, you know, you can't travel if you've tested positive. I like Puerto Rico. I wouldn't mind a week in Puerto Rico. I should have volunteered. Also, thanks to... Did Anthony do this? Anthony Nielsen? This is the thumbnail from last week's show.
Best thumbnail ever.
I want to complain.
These things just keep getting better and better.
Pruitt got off easy.
He
got a hat and straw. The rest
so
of us
hysterical.
Googly-eyed.
It's the thumbnail, so I can't show it. But, yeah. Wow. Yeah, you didn't get googly eyes or anything yet. You just got a cowboy.
I already have googly eyes, apparently.
And Jeff, man, you look like a crazy character.
I was having it up for it. Yeah, I was getting into an ant. I was, for the good of the show, I was sacrificing every bit of dignity I ever had.
Anyway. You are correct, because I was just sitting back judging all three
a
of you.
A suitably horrific,
as you always do,
thumbnail for episode 666. That'll give you a nightmare.
The evil show.
Holy cow.
So much fun.
All right. Let's see. We talked about, actually, Sheryl Sandberg quitting came in during the show, didn't it, last week?
So yes, it did.
We have talked about that.
Right at the top.
We don't have any more information about that.
No, the Wall Street Journal just speculated. There was nothing of note in their story about it.
Why Sheryl Sandberg quit Facebook's Meta. Yeah. That dovetailed with a company investigation into her activities. Is this about her and her relationship with Bobby Kotick, who is the CEO of Activision?
Yeah,
she lobbied a UK tabloid not to print an article about Kotick.
This was a clip job. They were trying to pull out everything they could do. I read the whole thing and there was nothing there.
There was nothing there? Okay.
No, nothing.
Okay.
There.
I think it's completely reasonable that Sheryl is stepping down to spend more time with her money. She's getting married next month. She's got a family. And I do think she has political ambitions in 2024. I really do. And
I think you're right.
This is the beginning of that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
She's earned this.
Now, here's the pile on. Latest news from Elon.
Oh, boy.
Latest news from Elon.
On fire
I don't,
hose,
I don't
Elon.
Want it. I don't want it. He's trying to get out of it. Twitter says no. Elon's big demand is, tell me about the bots. Like, you didn't know ahead of time. When he signed the deal, said, I'm not doing any due diligence. I'm just brilliant. This reminds me of a former boss of mine, Halsey Miner. Do you know the name Halsey Miner?
Oh, God, yeah, I knew Halsey Miner.
He founded CNET, and I worked for him briefly in the early days of CNET. He finally let me go and said, go to CNET, DD or something. Don't bug us here. But I had no rancor. He was a smart guy. He was a hedge fund guy, started CNET, did very well, made a lot of money. But Halsey, famously, I think he's bankrupt now. He's in tax trouble for sure. But famously bought a racehorse by looking in its eyes and saying, I can tell it's a winner. By the way,
that's right.
The racehorse was not a winner. But that's neither here nor there. He came from good Virginia stock, and he could look at a horse and say, that is a winner. Apparently not. Anyway, I feel like Elon Musk said, I've looked into the eyes of Twitter. I can tell it's worth $44 billion. Now he says, wait a minute, there's an awful lot of bots. Twitter said, no, A, you already said no due diligence. B, we say there's 5% and that's that. Now they say we are going to comply.
Well, but comply, what they're doing is calling his bluff. They're saying, okay, Elon, here's the fire hose.
Oh, that's...
Analyze away.
Yeah, have fun. 500 million tweets, half a billion tweets daily. The fire hose is famously something people wanted, but very few could get. I think the Library of Congress still has access to it.
Well, very few have the analytical power to deal with it.
Right. Well, Elon, it's the equivalent of when you're doing a discovery in a legal case, delivering a truckload of boxes, saying, "Oh, you wanted that data? Here you go."
I don't have a problem with him saying, you know what, I want this product, but you got to fix it up a little bit. We do the same thing when it comes to just buying regular day-to-day stuff, whether it be cars or houses and whatnot. I don't have a problem with that. The problem I have is him just sort of being, I don't know how to say it, but he knows there's bots out there. He's got a gazillion followers, and he knows everything that responds to him is pretty much a bunch of bots. How is this?
He probably runs a few bots himself. It's certainly been asserted. It's a little different, Ant. It's as if you went to a car dealership you sign on the dotted line, you said, I'll take it, and then you decided, oh, well, wait a minute, maybe I better look under the hood first. He agreed not.
No, not.
It was done.
Right. He didn't. I'm not saying that, like, he's already bought the car. I'm saying
he did.
When you go to look for a home,
no, but
you
Twitter's,
tend to do some sort of diligence.
Yeah, you do
right?
diligence. He waived that. Twitter's point is.
Yeah, so and that's a good example, Ant. If you buy a home with no conditions, you bought it. You don't have an out saying, oh, the home inspection. Nope, you didn't specify that. Oh, only if I get financing. Nope, you didn't specify
as
that.
As is,
buy the house.
Right.
Or the only out here is $1 billion.
Right. And it may not even be the out. He may not even be able to pay the breakup fee and get out of it. Twitter could hold his feet to the fire and say, no, you agreed. Contractually, you're bound.
I mean, I hope that he doesn't end up buying it, but I hope they take him.
Well, in the meantime.
So the whole penalty could be just nothing. He could still end up having to pay the full bill. And
yeah. Well, the penalty is that. It's paying the full bill.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So it's possible and probably likely that he's just trying to get a lower price. But again, it's just like the house analogy is much better than the car analogy. Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, house.
Yeah. He bought the house. He said, yeah, I'll pay you the money. No, I'm going to buy it as is. Waive inspections. You don't then get to change it. And Twitter has a contractual, he has a contractual obligation. Twitter could enforce that. They could say, no, you know. However, Musk says, I'm not, until I get this information about bots, I'm not going to do the deal. So they said, well, here. Now, by the way, this has not been announced. This is according to a person familiar with the company's thinking. The board is going to give him the fire hose, which means he could then pipe that half billion tweets into some computer and
he'll come up with some absolute BS analysis. I found 40 billion bots, but he'll probably get the headlines out of that because tech press is really stupid. But legally, it ain't going to give him an out.
The Washington Post says, when Musk signed the initial deal to buy the company in April, he waived a right to look deeply at Twitter's finances and inner workings. The purchase agreement requires that Musk go through with the deal unless he could show the company misled him or a major event has changed its value.
And the company didn't make any claims that I know of about bots. So it's hard to use that as a basis.
Let's say this is October 2022. Because isn't that about the time all of this should be finalized, roughly around that time?
Something like that.
So he says, you know what? Nah, I don't want it.
They go to court. They sue.
Twitter has the legal right to take them to court.
Yep.
And the court sides with Twitter. What happens? Is it jail time? Is it
No, he owes
them. Garnishing his wages.
They garnish his wages.
That's it. Yeah.
The sheriff comes over and says, give me your money.
They tow away
realistically, what's going to happen? Because I don't understand the law.
I think, actually, Ant, you're making an excellent point, and I think that's the other thing. Elon, like other famous hucksters of the 21st century, knows that he's above the law and probably doesn't have to worry about it.
Just that.
Mm.
Mm. He's too big to fail. The lawyers from Skadden, Arp, Slate, Meager, and Flom...
That's a great firm. That name
that's
right there.
Elon's lawyers. Skadden, Arp, Slate, Meager, and Flom say Musk must have a complete and accurate understanding of the very core of Twit's business model, its active user base. Twitter's latest offer to simply provide additional details regarding the company's own testing methodologies, whether through written materials or verbal explanations, is tantamount to refusing Mr. Musk's data request. The only thing I blame Elon for at this point is just making a mess and a muddle of all this. People are leaving Twitter. Twitter employees are very anxious over everything.
Important people have been fired.
Trolling. It's pure trolling.
Destructive.
It's destructive trolling.
And a lot of shareholders, I think, will end up suing him, not just for his late disclosure, but for all the gameplay.
Well, he's already being sued.
Really affected the price.
He is being sued
for that.
Yeah,
but that alone. But I think that was the you violated the rules suit. I think there's another suit here to say that you manipulated the stock in the end, and you harmed the company.
Yeah. So annoying.
He is. But all the
stands,
Elon boys,
the stands, we call them, the Musk stands.
They're tiring. Because anything he does is just brilliant, and you don't give him credit. And what's your problem, man?
Well, to pile on now, the Texas Attorney General, who has problems of his own, has launched an investigation against Twitter for allegedly misreporting fake bot accounts. Attorney General Paxton says Twitter has until June 27th to respond. Ken Paxton. It's just a publicity stunt?
Is it coincidental since he's now a Texan?
It's not coincidental.
Not in the least.
Bring some revenue, some tax revenues to that state.
The subtext of all of this is Twitter banned President Trump. Elon has said multiple times now they should not have done it. It was stupid, and he would restore President Trump. By the way, we should point out what Twitter... They didn't ban Trump for a long time. There were a lot of people saying they should have banned him sooner. They only banned him for encouraging sedition against the United States to overturn election results. That's treasonous behavior. They banned him appropriately, and they banned him permanently. This, however, offends his fellow seditionists, including A.G. Paxton, so they're all just piling on.
And then the New York Times, I didn't put this in the rundown, but I got pissed off and put it on Twitter, which is what I do with everything that pisses me off these days, reported, well, Paxton kind of has some political benefit here. I mean, that angling of he did a cynical act and we're going to give him the credit for that and then say, hey, he could get credit for doing this with the right wing.
His job is to represent the people of the great state of Texas.
Drives me nuts.
And their interests, period. Not to gain political points.
Yep. And media points.
We got a mess on our hands, folks.
We have a mess.
Twitter is reassuring its staff. They say the shareholders will vote by August. The staff, understandably a little anxious. The lawyer told them today that the deal to sell the company is still progressing, that the shareholder vote will occur late next month or early August. The company's waiting for the SEC to approve the proxy, after which it will be sent to shareholders. This is coming from Vijaya Gadde, Twitter's head of legal and policy. This was at an all hands. Twitter has and will continue to cooperatively share information with Mr. Musk to consummate the transaction in accordance with the terms of the merger agreement. I say, we believe this agreement is in the best interest of all shareholders, the company said. We intend to close the transaction and enforce the merger agreement. And forget that one, Ant. Enforce the merger agreement at the agreed price and terms. Enforce is the operative word there.
Again, that word. And what does it mean to someone who doesn't care? What does it mean to someone that feels they're above the law?
Well, maybe he should care.
A court could say you owe N billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And when the court says it, you got to pay. However, given our courts these days, you're right, Ant. This guy.
Like I said, it's not like they're going to garnish his wages.
No, but they could take his Tesla stock. I mean, there are things they could do. Employees were very concerned about work from home. Twitter has, as you may remember, said you can work from home forever.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Elon, in a memo to his Tesla employees, said, you better get the hell back in here. And we want at least 40 hours a week from you. And it better be in the place where your major business is done, not some remote office. You got to come in. Gadde did say told the employees remote work is not protected by the merger agreement, so there's no guarantee.
Oof.
Elon gets to decide. So that caught, again, now if you're a Twitter employee.
People made decisions for their lives. They moved because the company told them you don't ever have to come back. You can do what you want to do.
So true.
Now, Elon is reducing the value of this company, nibbling away at the value of this company bit by bit, whether he buys it or not. Which is too bad. I mean, I'm not a You know, I don't think the world would be worse off if there were no Twitter. But what I don't want to see is a hobbled Twitter.
I mean, I'm going to disagree once again. And I was just at a great conference at University of Virginia that our friend Siva Vaidyanathan put on. And there was a lot of discussion there about...
Siva hates Facebook. What's his opinion on Twitter?
He hates social media. He hates the idea of connecting all mankind. Okay. This is where I love him. I respect him. But I disagree about this.
Oh, really?
Things.
Yeah. He's great on that.
he's brilliant on that.
Yeah.
But a lot of the discussion was around the creation of counter publics, as it's called, online, you know, is possible because of a Twitter.
What's a counter public?
And to dismiss it, a smaller public that's not represented, like Black Twitter, like LGBTQ Twitter, like any group
affinity groups
that doesn't have the chance. Well, more than affinity, any group that doesn't have the power under the view of what is normally considered the public.
It gives a voice to outgroups.
Non-mainstream.
Yes, exactly. It's John Warner is the academic who came up with counterpublics.
That's a good way to put it. Okay. I like that.
Yeah. And so, when you say, oh, we're better off without Twitter, well, no, a lot has been built there that you and I don't see.
No, that's right. Yeah.
That is critical.
And you could say the same thing for Facebook.
You can in a lot of ways, yes.
Yeah.
Any online community, right?
Yeah, and that's not to say they're perfect. It's not to say there aren't a lot of flaws. It's not to say it couldn't be done far better or that it won't be done far better. But as of today, people built something there, and to get that just thrown away is a problem.
Yeah, were
you being facetious with him not really caring about the connection of people?
No. It's not that he doesn't care. He says, and I'm going to misquote him here, and we should have models. We've been trying.
We really have, yeah.
But he wrote his latest book about Facebook, which I have somewhere over there, basically says that to connect all of mankind without the guardrails in was irresponsible and ill-fated from the start.
Okay,
now,
so
I'll agree that it was
the guardrail of a 28-cent stamp was fine.
Well, but that's just... that's a one-to-one. I think you're right. You're right. What fascinates me is that the Postal Service was the original internet, right? Except your mail ended up on the bulletin board in the town square for all to see, which is the difference, right?
Yeah.
Or if you wanted to put if you wanted to reach 100 people, you had to buy 128 cent stamps.
Right? His position is it undermines democracy. The book is Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy. And he's been on the show before. I love Siva. He's a smart guy. He's just very, very busy guy. He's traveling a lot. He's doing a lot of conferences. But we will get him on. This is a tough one. You know, both arguments are valid.
Oh, absolutely. That's why there's a discussion. That's what Siva brought together with about 25 academics.
Yeah, good for him. Good for him.
It was a discussion about deliberation.
Yeah.
And it was fascinating because some of the academics said, this idea that we want to have deliberation as an ideal. One of them said brilliantly, one view is that you can't deliberate at this scale. Another view is, you can deliberate at a smaller scale. Is that what we want? Well, as somebody said there, your town council or your faculty meeting are a deliberative scale that works, but they're hell, right? We hate them. But deliberation is hard.
They get the job done. It's painful, but it makes a difference. You got to do it. I mean, you're right. It's a flippant thing for me to say we'd be better off without Twitter. That's not certainly what I want.
So here's a quote that I put in my book manuscript from Siva. Facebook is just too big to govern, he said. We are all victims of its success. It's a story of the hubris of good intentions, a missionary spirit and an ideology that sees computer code as the universal solvent for all human problems. And I don't disagree with him about that. I think that
there was
hubris about it.
I love their project. What is it? Green? Twitter Green? What is the thing
Blue Sky that Jack Dorsey
funded? Yes, I love Mastodon, and we run a Mastodon instance at twit.social. And I really think that a decentralized, federated Twitter-like place. It would be a much better place.
Except, I agree. I absolutely agree.
Because then you really could create your out. You know, you could have a black Mastodon. You could have a whole place.
Yes. And you could also say there's bad speech out there.
Yep.
Leave it. It's there. Always is.
Yep.
But let me ask you this, Leo.
Yep.
I agree with you, but the yes, but that I grapple with is that if we agree that we should moderate out of the world, obviously child porn and harassment. Let's say if it's distributed, you kind of can't. It's
well, you can
it's
and
in
you
a,
can't.
A million places.
So
yeah, tell me about that.
Right now, child porn is going to happen. It happens, and it's going to happen, and you can't. There's always going to be a place people are going to go, and they're going to exchange stuff. With a Mastodon-like solution, you might have somebody set up a Mastodon that's full of child porn. Now, they have legal restrictions. You know, they're running up against the foul of the law. But let's pretend that's not the case. Here's the beauty. Any other Mastodon instance could choose to ignore it, could choose to block it if they want, or not.
Right. So it's an emergent norm of the entirety of Mastodon communities together, by their individual decisions, decide what makes
sense. Yeah, you're not going to put the Clubhouse out of business, just as you can't stop, currently in the real world, you can't stop them from gathering at somebody's house. You can't, you know, that's up to the law to stop. You can stop it that way. But you can isolate them. You can keep them out of the mainstream by just not following them. I do that with Gab on my on my Mastodon. Since that's the only other Mastodon I don't follow, I don't allow federation with. But I do allow federation with others, which means anybody can on my who's a member of twit.social can follow anybody else. In fact, I think recently I took Gab off that list, presuming if somebody wants to follow Gab, that's fine. It doesn't solve the problem of somebody from Gab atting me, and then I might see that.
So let's imagine you're a regulator, in another life I could imagine you would have been, and you get a law passed saying that vaccine disinformation is illegal.
Yeah.
Forget. Let's say you're in the UK. We don't have a First Amendment.
Right.
In the architecture of Discord.
Not Discord. I'm talking about Mastodon, but...
Mastodon. Yeah. In the architecture of Mastodon...
Discord has some
as
similar...
As a regulator, could you do anything?
No, because nobody runs Mastodon. There's no centralized Mastodon.
You would have to go after every single Mastodon server and say, if you...
Just like a blog, just like forums. It's much more like forums. Forums that interoperate. Think of it that way.
But interoperability is new. It's not... The old forums you had... It's more like Usenet, I guess.
It's kind of like Usenet, yeah. But it's a much better, more elegant system. But it's that idea. So you have discrete spaces, which would be forums. But you can follow anybody on any other forum. You can follow anybody on any of the other Mastodon. And that becomes part of your Mastodon feed. Not everybody else's, by the way. Just yours.
Right.
So it gives you kind of the best of both worlds, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So with Usenet, I'm just trying to play this out, and this is really helpful for me. Was that the same case then, that you couldn't have erased something across all of Usenet because it was distributed and it was served from a million places?
There's no central authority. And I presume in Twitter Green or whatever it is, what is it? Green
piece? Blue Sky.
Blue Sky.
I mean, not blue.
Blue Sky. I assume that has a similar... You know, honestly, I think Blue Sky, by the way, has the creator of Mastodon is on their advisory board.
Well, I'm also planning to...
What are you doing? Do not mess with your settings.
I hit the wrong button.
His camera went from very, very bright to very, very dark.
I actually plan to interview somebody high up at Blue Sky pretty soon. So I can learn more.
I'd be curious how much like Mastodon. Mastodon has stayed the test of time. I mean, there have been other attempts like Identica and StatusNet. Mm-hmm. GNU Social, this has really lasted and I think works quite well. The only thing that hurts Mastodon is it's not as fast and exciting and sexy as Twitter is, because it's not one
difference.
Big blob of everything.
Right. And I think that's the interesting issue to me, is that the beauty of Twitter is that you can do something and anybody who's on Twitter can see it. On Mastodon, mm-hmm. or Discord.
Well, there's a discovery issue.
Blue Sky.
Everybody can see it, but there is a discovery issue.
Exactly. And so breaking out and breaking through, if we think in a,
so let me show you this
community basis, this works.
This is
a mass media basis, it's a problem.
This is twit.social, which has, I've set it up kind of to look a little bit like TweetDeck. So in this the first column is just, you know, I can get rid of that. Whoops, I don't want to log out. That's the wrong button. First column is just for tweeting and stuff like that. This second column is my home. That's who I follow. That's your Twitter feed. It's not algorithmic. There is no algorithm. It's completely chronological. And I control that by just following somebody. I can follow somebody locally and on my twit.social. Or, and most of these are not on twit.social, this person is at rage.love. That's a completely different Mastodon instance. So you follow them, and then you'll see it just like in your Twitter feed. There's a central column here, which is notifications. That's just so I know if somebody mentions me, I don't have to do that. And then here in this third column, you can have a federated timeline, which is just everything. That's the fire hose of every other Mastodon incident I'm federated with. Yes, everybody.
Okay.
That's a useful thing for discovery. There's a local timeline, which is even people I don't follow, hey, Galia, she's saying boo. that's everybody on twit.social, whether I'm following them or not, right? So you could see what's going on in that particular server. There is some discovery stuff, too. There's explore. It's not, you know, there's hash, you know, this is trending. As you can see, it's not very active. But there's some stuff going on, and that could be more depending on how people use it. So, I think this has been going on for a while, and
the
creator
was named Eugen Rutschko.
Yeah, well, Eugene.
Okay, yeah,
Eugen.
Pronunciation.
Yeah.
What if we're German? It'd be Eugen.
He's German, so it's probably what it is then. I think he's Eugen. German. Yeah.
Where did he come from? Do you know?
I don't know much about him. Actually, that's a really good.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So he's chief executive officer of Mastodon. So there is an entity of Mastodon.
That's just the code. That's the code base. And by the way, it's open source. So it's been forked multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
Truth Social, Trump's is a fork of Mastodon. So,
Did they get out of trouble with, was it the GPL?
Trump?
Truth Social?
I don't know because they violated his GPL for sure, but whether he's going to pursue it, I don't know. So he's German born. Let me see if I can find out more about him. I bet he has by now. He has a Wikipedia entry, chief executive officer, but that just means he's responsible for the. You know, he does not have a Wikipedia.
Huh.
That's kind of too bad.
Well, you mentioned it by tomorrow, somebody might have.
He's a great. All my experience interacting with him has been great. He really cares. He does this, you know, he doesn't make a lot of money.
Right.
I don't pay him anything for Mastodon. You don't have to. It's open source. I think this is exactly. So let's say Twitter poofed. You know, Elon killed it. It's interesting. When Elon first put in the bid for Twitter, we had hundreds of people flock to twit.social. I added 500 or 600 new members, but nothing happened. It's still a backwater kind of.
Yeah.
You know, they used it for a while and then went back to Twitter. But if Twitter went away.
Or went behind a paywall.
Or something. I think that Mastodon is a very credible alternative that solves a lot of these problems.
You know, it'd be interesting if Twitter today said we're going to allow someone to export all the identities out of Twitter so that you could re-import them somewhere else.
Well, that might be an interesting poison pill. I don't think at this point, I don't think the board...
They can't do it right now, but yeah.
Yeah, but they did a poison pill for about 4 seconds and then took it back because they wanted the 54.20 a share. But I think that would be really interesting. They may not be able
hacker.
To do it at this point. You probably, if you're in a sale of contract, you can't say, oh, here's all the stuff. I'm going to give it away. So I bet they can't, but that would be really interesting. You know what, Elon? If you really want to do a good thing with Twitter, that would be a good thing to do. make it possible to export everything, make the fire hose available to anybody who wanted it. You know, there are things you could do with Twitter that would be great to make it more of a public entity and a public value. Open source the code. There's lots of things you could do. I think Blue Sky was a very good idea. By the way, and I've mentioned this before, Blue Sky is funded and there's nothing Elon could do about it.
Yeah. And I got a question for you, Ant, since you are Dr. Sure. Social there at Twitter.
Oh, I am not. I promise you I'm not.
Well, no, but you're bringing people in. You're caring about
community
them
manager.
As a community.
Yeah.
You're a community manager.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm curious what you've learned in that experience as community manager at Twit. And let me just say, I'd be curious at various answers. What you learned about functionality, what you've learned about people, what you've learned about what people like. I mean, yes, it's just Twit, and Twit's a friendly place, but what have you found in your experience?
Well, I think with it being Twit is a lot easier for me because it's such a big community, and I put that in quotes. Mm-hmm. Everybody just loves on everybody here. So there's really not much to worry about, just making sure everyone's happy and have somewhere to converse, whether they want to talk about code and Linux or whether they want to talk about sports. And it's just been really, really easy. Now, trying to manage something like a photographer's community, which I did a long time ago, that was a pain in the butt because people just had egos, you know?
There's one thing that makes the Discord really easy to moderate and really successful, which is you have to pay $7 a month to be in the club. And having a bar of any kind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have
skin
no
the game.
There's zero trolling because the troll is not going to spend $7 just to get kicked out. refunds. So that eliminates, you know, there are problems occasionally, but they're minor because there's a lot of skin in the game. So that's number one. And by the way, even though in order to pay $7 a month, I guess we have to have your credit card. And a lot of people in the Discord use handles. We don't know who they are. That's fine. And I don't have any problem with that. Same thing in our chat. I also run a free community, twit.community.
And I love that.
And that one is free. That. And it has more problems. There is trolling occasionally and stuff. But it is also a very good place for conversation. So part of that is there's this kind of self-selecting nature of it, right?
Yeah.
And $7, there's more issues, absolutely.
When I ran photographers community, I battled every daggum week with just egos because everybody, they wanted to be judged on their photography, yet they didn't want to be judged on their photography, you know? They say, hey, critique my photograph, and you tell them, hey, well, I think this could be better or this could look like this and yada, yada, yada. And they get defensive, and then they start throwing stones, and then they tell you, no, Canon's better than Nikon, and Nikon is better than Sony, and so on. I mean, it was just a bunch of that, just ego stuff, and it was never any real community of people trying to help other photographers out with the craft and help them get better. Instead, it's just, you know.
Yeah, we have that,
geeks are nicer than artists. And I think that's what you're saying here.
Well, okay, I'm going to show you a thread that's going on right now in the Twit community, discourse forums. These are the open forums.
Twit.community.
We have a really nice guy, P. Holder, who has just taken on himself to become a moderator. So thank you. He does a great job. So a guy came in right after Twit saying, the assumption seems to be that all the listeners share the politics and views of the people in the show. And then P. Holder says, the assumption seems to be your views are not so fragile they can survive your exposure to someone else's point of view, to which RJ replies, it seems to me a show wants to maximize its audience, but seek to acknowledge that not everyone listening shares their exact point of view, and back and forth, back and forth. Stop whining, blah, blah, blah. And then, sorry to interrupt, you know, I have a question. I mean, I have to say it self-corrects a little bit. Occasionally we'll boot people. P. Holder has had to boot some people. Yeah. So have I. So something completely open is always going to have a little bit of that. This is life. One thing I will tell you, I know for a fact, like a garden, if you don't tend to,
yes,
you've got to moderate. You've got to have a presence. Ideally, in all the Twit stuff, all the hosts would be active and present because our presence lifts the conversation.
Yes, sir. I agree. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I'll do it more often.
Well, you don't have to. I'm not saying that to you particularly. But
this is why Ant had his farmer's hat last
all
week.
Yeah, and that's why I'm in there all the time. And, I mean, it's at least my responsibility. The other thing is, if there is a bad apple, you have to get rid of them quickly. You have to aggressively moderate. This is something Twitter does not do because of free speech. But I believe in any public forum, you have to moderate quickly because what will happen, like in a garden, the weeds will push out the good people and it's a True. Vicious circle. And pretty soon it's 4chan. So nobody wants to be in a place where their kind of stuff is going on.
No, we learned that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I learned that in 1995 when we started our first forums on NJ.com. The first sign of trouble, we started the forums. People, you know, we had one for all the sports, and my boss said he really wanted us to emphasize high school wrestling, and he was right because high school wrestling doesn't get the attention that football, basketball, and baseball get, right? So, place for us! This is great, right? And huge traffic. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. And then someday, but we didn't know anything about moderation. This is 95. Someday, somebody comes in and starts a thread about Coach Nutgrabber. He said, we better watch this. And so we hired moderators. We didn't, you know, it's all the stuff we learned. And originally we thought that the moderator would be the host and also the person who killed stuff. And then we got somebody who had experience with this at early bulletin boards. And he said, no. The mayor is not the cop who also kisses the baby.
Yeah, that's right.
And you got to have that.
Great.
By the way, since we're talking about Twitter and interactivity, Tony Hale just tweeted, they've added a new feature to Twitter Blue.
Oh.
Which is top articles, which I think we all like. You can now get the top articles from the people you follow and also from the people they follow. So it's a way to expand out to the next.
Oh, and this is what they bought when they bought Nuzzle. Nuzzle had the friends.
Exactly.
They had, and then it was friends of friends. So they're adding a Nuzzle feature. So here it is.
So I just
opened up my Twitter, and I'm a Twitter Blue, as we all are, the three of us, Twitter Blue subscriber. Get more news. People they follow expands your results, showing the most shared articles from the people you follow plus the people they follow. And you have to turn that on. So I'll turn that on.
I will
it's just there. Yeah.
Oh, so this is just like Nuzzle now. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
So Nuzzle will have one more. If they're going to add all the Nuzzle features, there'll be one more column that's basically stuff that nobody else mentioned that is worth a little editorial. Yeah. You know.
By the way, do you think this is one of the stories in my feed? How San Francisco became a failed city. Do you think it's a failed city?
Well, this is in result to the election we had yesterday, the California primary. Their attorney general, who was very progressive, Chesa Boudin, got thrown out by a landslide. Which is, the polls did not predict, by the way. They thought it was going to be a very close race. It was not. I don't have enough to know about it. I do understand why the residents of San Francisco threw him out, because he got the blame, rightly or wrongly, for a very big rise in minor crimes, smash and grabs.
Smash and grabs.
Burglaries, and of course the rise in homelessness downtown, fentanyl abuse, fentanyl deaths, and he got blamed for all of that. So whether that what I don't know is if that's accurate or not. He was very progressive. His parents, he was a deputy public defender, and his parents were radicals. So he came. In fact, there was some concern because his parents, Kathy Boudin and Dave Gilbert, were Weather Underground members. And when he was 14 months old, they were arrested and convicted of murder in a Brinks robbery. She got 20 years to life. He got 75 years to life. He was raised by adoptive parents. Guess who? Bernadine Dorn. So he was very radical in his upbringing. Bernadine Dorn, another well-known Weather Underground member. So he came in saying we're going to deal with this in a different way. But
most of the complaints are smash and grab and public urination.
Yeah.
Right? About San Francisco?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
But I tell you what,
it's
bad.
It's pretty bad.
Lisa and I went to a Michelin 2 or 3 star restaurant downtown Very excited. Beautiful restaurant. Lovely. But in order to get there, we had to walk through a homeless encampment. One block away from the front door, there was a guy defecating on the street, which really kind of put us off our dinner. 5 p.m. Yeah. And this is endemic downtown San Francisco. And it's a problem. I don't know if I don't. I know it's not Boudin's fault, although prosecutions under him went down by about 50%. So he said he wasn't going to seek charges for a lot of things like, you know, minor drug offenses, gang memberships. He was, you know, trying to change things. And
but it's the problem is if you go too far, I know this is way off the topic of the show, but this
overcorrecting
blue. But you end up in Rudy Giuliani territory, the broken glass.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, the squeegees guys on the street corner were a lifestyle problem for us privileged people who had jobs and cars. But you go too far, you arrest a lot of people, they end up in jail for a long time for what are minor offenses.
Although, I got to point out... you know, that broken glass theory was Malcolm Gladwell popularized that. And, of course, Rudy Giuliani ran on that. If we fix the little things, you know, stop graffiti, stop broken windows, stop the squeegee men, everything gets better. Northeastern did a study on it, and they said, we've debunked it. It's not true.
Yes.
It's not true. So I don't know. Maybe there's debate in social science circles about it. Cory Doctorow calls those just so stories where they're so neat and pat and they make so much sense. And you read, you know, Malcolm Gladwell and you go, oh, that makes so much sense. That's obviously true, but life is much more complicated.
It's like filter bubbles.
Yeah.
Right? That now we're seeing that no, filter bubbles don't really exist. Another favorite now people are going nuts with is that, the admission that, studies that said that time spent on screens was a cause of teen depression and stuff, and now the data is saying
it's
no.
A result of it, perhaps.
Well, it may be more about what you're actually doing,
right?
And so this is early days. We need the research, we need the data, we need the interpretation, but it's early days to think I found it. I know the cause and the root of all problems. That leads to get ready, Ant. Moral panic.
We have problems in this society, and they may be bigger than anything that a district attorney can do or even a mayor can solve. I mean, London Breed, the mayor of San Francisco,
company.
Is very good, but the homeless problem in San Francisco is virtually intractable.
But it's always been, Leo, when I lived there, San Francisco was the place the dreamers came at the end of the rainbow. And you always had more of that there than any other city I've lived in. Now, New York has plenty of problems. Chicago had plenty of problems. I've lived in these other cities. But San Francisco was just drew a huge population of people who
ended up on the streets.
Weren't succeeding in society otherwise. Right.
Yeah.
And so it put an obligation of social infrastructure on the city. The city
and
was never.
Ronald Reagan, when he was governor, closed the mental institutions. Probably rightly so. His idea of creating many small halfway houses was probably the right thing to do, but they never created the halfway houses.
Well, but it also led to police dealing with mental health problems.
Well, and there is some evidence, I think, that the problem in San Francisco also comes from the fact that the police hate Boudin and have decided just not to do anything. Like, they're just turning. And by the way, this what happened in Uvalde is a crisis across the country, apparently. Police turning their eye, you know, their head away from crime because they don't like the administration or they don't like this or they don't like that or they don't like the people calling to defund the police or for whatever reason. Boudin said, you know, one of his last prosecutions, he shut down a big ring of people reselling stolen goods. He uncovered it. The DA's office uncovered it. They couldn't get the police to help them in the arrest, so they had to rent U-Hauls to go in and arrest.
Jesus.
Yeah, the police said, yeah, no, we're not going to help you here because this you're just trying to score political capital before this recall. And so he had to rent U-Hauls to do it. So there's a, you know what? Life is complicated. These just-so stories are very appealing. It's wonderful to think, oh, I know what's wrong. We can fix it. But it's a chaotic system, and it's not easy to know what the causes of things are. I mean, income inequality is getting pretty bad in this country. Look at that.
Ooh.
You know?
Yeah.
Look at that. All right. Boy, we got philosophical fast on this. Stacy wasn't here to stop us. Let's take a little break. We've got lots more to talk about. I might even do a change log. I'm feeling frisky.
Ooh, right. Google stuff.
Our show today brought to you by HackerRank. Between deadlines and frustrating interview tools that aren't doing the job for technical interviews, conducting a technical interview might be the last thing you have time for. But you know, it's the most important thing you do. But what was it like the last time? Especially now that, you know, you're doing them over Zoom. You spend the first 10 minutes of your interviews just, you know, trying to get the environment right to share code from a bunch of different documents, wasting your time, maybe even your candidate's time. HackerRank's got a solution. HackerRank's the place people go to get jobs and to hire in technology. It's a great place. I hang out there because they have these puzzles designed to help you do better with the interview process as an applicant. But I love doing these programming puzzles. They're so much fun. You can just do them for fun. They have developed something for the hirer, the employer, an IDE, an integrated development environment for the tech interview process. So cool. With a set of easy-to-use interview tools, you'll quickly find the best developers for your technical projects. You get a pre-made question library with more than 2,500 questions, so you don't have to spend hours trying to think up coding questions. All the questions, the best practices questions are in there. A code playback feature. You know, sometimes you'll get the candidate to do some coding. You want to watch what they're doing. With the code playback, you can review their coding approach, score their skill levels. You've got a built-in whiteboard you both can see. So if you want to try some collaboration stuff, see how problems are solved in real time, it's all there for you. This is just one more reason you should check out HackerRank. Time to reboot your technical interview process with HackerRank. Click interview. Done. Start using HackerRank for free today. See how much better a technical interview can be. Reboot those technical interviews with HackerRank's easy-to-use tools. With a pre-made question library, code playback, built-in whiteboard, you'll be conducting better technical interviews and instantly identifying the right talent. Go to HackerRank.com/twig to start a better tech interview for free today. HackerRank, HackerRank, HackerRank.com/twig. Thank you, HackerRank, for supporting Twig and for those great problems. I love them. And now back to Skadden, Arp, Slate, Meager, and Flom. usually you just say Skadden, Arps. I see that all the time, Skadden, Arps. But I love the full name. I just have to give them the full name. New York State has passed the first ever right to repair law for electronics. There are other right to repair laws. When I, you know, because I remember hearing there's dozens of these states that have been planning to do this, the first, well, yeah, in a way, the first for consumer electronics, Colorado passed a much-needed right to repair law for electric wheelchairs. This was a big issue for people in chairs. They couldn't fix their own chair. Sometimes you'd wait weeks or months for repairs from the official repairs. So Colorado fix that. New York State has just passed their Fair Repair Act. Now, it is a little limited. It requires all manufacturers who sell digital electronic products in the state to make tools, parts, and instructions for repair available to consumers and independent shops. This is the kind of thing Apple hated, lobbied against like crazy. It's awaiting signature by the governor. It'll take effect 1 year after it's signed. iFixit called it a giant leap for repair kind, but it's interesting because it does have exceptions for home appliances, medical devices. You can actually almost see the money moving from lobbyists' hands into the pockets of the state assembly. Home appliances, medical devices,
and
like wheelchairs,
and all the premium tech,
and agricultural equipment. And of course, part of the right to repair is business fight with John Deere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Apple, I guess, just lost the lobbying battle. They didn't pay enough to get exempted out of this. Massachusetts has a law on automobile data. Colorado, the bill on wheelchairs, and now New York State for consumer electronic devices. That's a big deal.
So, Leo, I should know this because I do try to watch various Twitch shows, but there's so many of them, I miss it. Have you had? have you tried to repair an iPhone?
We did.
Gotten the whole.
So, Micah. So this was. I use the term malicious compliance. Yeah. That's like when you pay. You know, you have to pay a $100,000 tax bill, and you give them a million pennies. malicious compliance. So Apple's got a, you know, self-repair thing. First of all, it's limited only to the very newest stuff. So it's an iPhone 12 or 13 with a brand new iPhone SE. That's it. But Micah happened to have an iPhone 12. I tried to give him an SE. He said, no, it's too old. I can't. So he doesn't need a new battery in his iPhone 12. It's only a year old, but he said, all right, I'm going to order a battery. They charge you more than $1,000 for two big cases worth 76 pounds of equipment.
Yeah, they're gigantic.
It's like crazy. Micah got it all. Now
you're a roadie taking a truck worth of sound equipment with
own gear and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this is the same stuff that Apple uses in the stores. It's not necessarily stuff you need. iFixit doesn't, they've got kind of low end ways of getting all of this done. But if you went to the Apple store, let me see if I can find this Micah video, because you wait till you see it. Was it under Tech Break? Probably was, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Tech Break.
I have somebody else's video on YouTube, but you want Micah's?
Yeah. What? Pocket operator for Pixel. We do a lot of Tech Breaks. Here we go. God, I didn't realize we had that many. Holy cow, here we go. So here's the equipment that Micah, there's the cases, okay, the big.
The cases are as big as he is.
Now, you have 7 days. You've got to return them, or otherwise they're going to charge you more than $1,000 for this gear.
So stuff you'd never use otherwise.
I mean, you don't need this. This is a big press. One of them's a heater, and one of them's a press to put the phone back together. Again, that's the press. Looks like an espresso machine with a big lever. Because the phone's glued together. The heater loosens the glue. So it's a little oven to loosen the glue. But here's the problem. That and the battery were sent separately. The battery didn't arrive. 1 day goes by, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. On the seventh day,
whoa,
Micah calls Apple. Apple says, no, this is handled by Spot, a company called Spot. He calls Spot. Spot says, he says, well, the battery hasn't come yet. They said, well, that's not our problem. You have 7 days. If you don't return it, we're going to charge you. So
pass the buck.
So we have all this stuff, but we don't have the one thing, the 2-ounce part that you need to fix it. And I think Apple doesn't really care. I mean, you can make a lot of excuses like, well, the battery's lithium ion, so it has to be shipped separately, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Here it is. 2 hours left. It arrived. But too late. Mike is in the car because he doesn't want to have to pay $1,049 for this stuff.
Now, do they charge, even for getting the deposit for not returning it, is there a fee for?
Yeah, there's $49.
Are you paying for this whole thing?
$49 rental and $49 for the battery. It ends up, so when you add it together, it's almost exactly what you would pay if you gave it to Apple to fix. coincidence? I think.
But you have a right to repair.
Yeah, you wanted to repair it yourself. It's just Apple's, you know, middle finger compliance.
Yeah, it sure is.
So, you know, obviously our advice is don't, you know, get Apple to do it. I guess if you were a third-party repair shop, you would buy those tools.
You probably already have them.
But I think you have to have a separate set for each model, by the way, because it's all just exactly fit.
Oh, jeez.
So, no, you don't have them. See, this is part of it. It's the only Apple had these tools for the longest time until now.
But U-Brake iFix has the means to heat it up and pull it apart.
Yeah, I mean, if you go to iFixit to replace an iPhone 12 battery, they will sell you a battery, and they will, but, you know, it may not be from Apple, right? And they will sell you a little thing you put in the microwave oven, a little bolster that you put on it to heat up the phone to loosen the glue. They have all little spudgers, little picks that you pry the thing apart with and all that. So, yeah, you can get the same stuff, and it's cheaper. Let me see. Here's the iPhone 12. Let's see. Battery replacement. Difficulty moderate. I think that's generous. You need a pentalobe screwdriver, an eye opener, a set of opening picks, a suction handle, a tri-point screwdriver, a spudger, tweezers. But they, you know, to their credit, there's the eye opener that you put in the microwave to heat it up. Here's the suction cups to open it up. Would you want to do this yourself?
Oh, God.
This is what all of that Apple stuff does.
I don't want to put a screen protector on it. Yeah. I'll have bubbles and screw it up.
But, you know, you can do it yourself. There's some screws and, let Apple do it. But that's the whole point, isn't it?
I'd ask Mr. Burke to do it. I trust him.
Yeah, let Burke do it. That's my motto.
So I put up a video from Mac Rumors under that story on the rundown. And so they got the battery, and they're doing it. And it looks like hell. It looks like utter hell.
Yeah. I mean, Micah could have done it. He would
it's
have
so
done
small.
It. He's so small. Yeah. He's got little fingers. So this is, by the way, I'm at step 32, and I haven't even removed the battery. God. So, look at, I love iFixit. God bless them. They've been making this available forever. And, Apple now makes an official way to do it, which seems to me to be kind of dragging your feet compliance. Yeah, I think The Verge did it. Everybody's done it now. This is Otherworld Computing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no, this is Mac Rumors. That was their advertiser.
That's what I put up, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. There you have it.
So you have a law now that says you have a right to repair, but it ain't going to matter.
Well, I wonder. You know, I mean, with companies acting like this, malicious compliance, you know. Here's a law I think should be passed globally. Ontario, Canada, the province in Canada, has passed a law to force companies to allow you to disconnect when you're off work. As of June 2nd, employers in Ontario with 25 or more employees must have a written policy with regard to disconnecting. Disconnecting from work means not engaging in work-related communications, emails, telephone calls, video calls, the sending or reviewing of other messages so as to be free from the performance of work.
Yeah, just tell that to my students.
Kudos.
There are a lot of businesses. We don't expect, you know, but there are businesses where if the boss sends an email out in the middle of the night, you're expected to respond within an hour.
The IT guy. They should have
to respond. That's different.
Yeah, it's different for those folks. But,
you know, God bless him.
I've seen...
Jammer B came in the middle of the night, Sunday morning, because our power went out and he had to reboot everything. Right? So, go ahead.
He's a star.
He's a star, though.
He's different.
Yeah. I didn't make him do it. He just did it. Although it's
right,
a good
he
thing.
Just did it.
It's a good thing he did.
Yeah.
It's his job, he says. And here's another one Apple I'm not going to be happy about, but the EU is now mandating USB-C for all phones sold in the EU by autumn of next year.
Okay, no, 2024. Are they saying which USB-C?
Well, what do you... No, no.
There's all these different USB-Cs. Yeah, but, are they also going to standardize that?
No.
No.
I mean, there's Thunderbolt 3, there's Thunderbolt 4, there's US, but that's all about data. They mandate the whole, and you have to have a charging, it has to be chargeable through
that
hole.
It has to be able to charge.
They're not saying it has to be Thunderbolt 4 or USB 3 or anything like that, but you got to at least be able to charge it via USB-C. So that's good.
But I like how Raygun has in the IRC. So USB-C is already 5 years old, 7 years old once this goes into effect. Are we expecting another standard?
Better not
in the next couple of years?
Well, never say never in technology, right?
Right.
RS-232C, I miss it.
I want a 29-pin port. I think it's safe to say USB-C will be around for a few more years. The thing is, we all have USB-C chargers and cables now, right? This laptop, this Dell laptop, doesn't come... Laptops for years had proprietary chargers, even Dell.
Yeah.
Now it just, it's USB-C. I can run it on any USB-C charger. Yep.
My mouse.
Yep. That's how it should be. You're right. There'll be another standard. But,
so, but now they're going to have to go, but now it's hard enough to go through a standards process. Now you're going to have to go and get legislation written to permit a different plug when there's some functionality that you want.
I think this makes sense. Everybody has a USB-C or will from now on have USB-C chargers and cables. They
the
should
industry,
be
what
interoperable.
I'm saying is the industry should have done this without legislation. They bought their own trouble, but Apple particularly did this.
Oh, yeah.
If the industry had said, you know, and they've got plenty of trade
the industry did,
which
for the most
this.
Part. Remember, it was micro USB, and it really was crappy. Almost everybody but Apple's been USB-C for years. This is aimed at Apple. It's just Apple.
And so now, if something better comes along, the degree of difficulty of getting to it is now higher. This is one of those cases where it shouldn't have been legislation. The legislation should have been threatened, and Apple should have then conceded.
That's a
Apple
good point. Because
that it is.
Let's say there is this new super port. The good thing about USB-C is it has transitioned. The other end, what's inside, has changed considerably, as you point out. It
Which
used
causes
to be
the confusion. Yeah.
Yeah, but not overcharging. The charging has been consistent. So I mean, there's PD, so it has changed a little bit. There's quick charging and so forth. But the fundamental ability to charge, that's been the same as long as that port's been around. So the data changes, and this doesn't preclude that. So if you want Thunderbolt 5 on USB-C, presuming you can do it, but USB-C has gone from, I mean, Type-C has gone from USB 2.1 to USB 3.1, 3.2, Thunderbolt 3, Thunderbolt 4, which is USB 4. So it's handled 4 major data transitions without a problem. I think... that's likely that'll be for a while. I see your point, though. If somebody said, "Well, I think the next big thing is FireWire," they couldn't put it on a phone.
I think a parallel port.
SCSI. Everything should be a SCSI port.
Everything is SCSI.
From now on,
I used to have to rewire when I had my Osborne 1 and I had a neck impact printer. I was rewiring cables, and I'm not you.
Were you soldering them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Back in the day. No. Switch that one and that one.
You're such a geek. No. Yeah. You get the pinouts.
Yeah.
And you hope that you have different color wires for each one.
Right.
And you have to solder the
points. I cursed a lot.
I'm sure Ant's
finally got it working.
A bit of that.
Yeah.
I stayed away from
Never
that.
Made cables.
Didn't want
to do it. Nope.
Mm-mm.
But you did get up in the middle of the night when duty called.
I did.
Yeah.
I had to do that a lot.
I know you did.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Unfortunately is right, yeah. Let's see. Speaking of new rules, the SEC is investigating. This is a good article from a New York Times Deal Book. New rules a year after the meme stock frenzy. Now, they're not going to say you can't buy GameStop stock. They're not going to say what you can buy or not, but what they are concerned about is what happened with Robinhood. A number of retail brokers, including Robinhood, during the rally when GameStop was going up, halted trading, right? Or limited how many shares you could buy. And at some point, I think some of them said you can't sell your shares, and as the shares started to crash, that pissed some people off. A number of hedge funds also lost a lot of money. So, but they're not going to outlaw meme stocks. You can't, right? That's insane. But what they can push for is a change to the rules on something called payment for order flow. And we talked about this is a complicated story.
Explain it to me, boss.
Forgive me for launching this. I wish Stacy were here. I could blame her. Stacy, what's payment for order flow? Because she's so good at that.
She is.
I will pull a Stacy and try to explain it. We've talked about this before with Robinhood. Why is Robinhood free, you might ask? Right? How can you have a stock? I mean, traditionally when you buy stocks, you'd pay a commission. You'd pay Schwab a commission right?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, along comes Robinhood.
And wait on the process. And it's not like instant either.
Along comes Robinhood, which people have celebrated because it democratizes stocks. It's free. I want to share that stock. You pay for the stock, but you don't have to bear a commission, which makes it, it's one of the reasons there's volatility, because it doesn't cost, if it doesn't cost you to do a transaction, you might buy and sell. So mm-hmm. how does Robinhood make money? And we talked about this a while ago on the show. They make money because they don't execute the orders. They sell the right to execute those trades to bigger firms, to wholesalers like Citadel Securities. They sell, so they charge a commission in effect, not to you, but to Citadel. Well, why would Citadel pay? Because now Citadel gets, this happens all instantly, right? Gets fast signals about stock movement and can buy or sell on trade on their own accounts and make money because they have advanced warning that a lot of people are buying AMC.
Mm-hmm.
So Citadel is in effect, you know, so the you have an advantage in the stock market if there's an information gap. If you know more than the other guy, you can make money. That's what they're paying for. And that's what Robinhood is using to fund their business. It is problematic because the information inequality is not between Citadel and, you know, Merrill Lynch. It's between Citadel and you.
Right.
So you're, and in fact, even Robinhood users might be paying more for a share of that stock than they should be because of this process. Citadel might, in fact, end up saying, well, the price for that stock is $1.30 when it's really $1.25 if you went some other way. So there's all sorts of problems. It does disadvantage less well-informed players.
Well, I don't know. How is this supposed to remedy that?
It makes it illegal. Okay. But it would also probably put Robin Hood out of business.
Right.
Or they would have to start charging for commissions for transactions. Brokers would need to develop new business models. Some major wholesalers told the Times that the SEC had refused their input, but the big trading firms argue the reported fix would only hurt the little guys. Former SEC chief economist S.P. Kotari told DealBook, the view is that payment for order flow somehow compromises market integrity, but the evidence shows retail investors are getting a good deal. Not sure about that.
Let me question.
Yeah.
Going way back, you needed a street next to the wall where people traded stuff, and you had to have somebody there to do it.
Hence the name Wall Street.
Hence Wall Street. But there's no reason you need a broker technologically today.
Well, yeah, you do.
What does a broker do?
You do.
You do, because you have to have somebody who is licensed to buy and sell stocks.
That's what I'm saying. Technologically,
there's no reason that's how it works.
Put up a marketplace.
Well, oh, I see. Yeah, you're right. Just like you buy anything else.
Wait a minute, what now?
You don't need a middleman.
What do you say?
You don't need a middleman.
You don't need a middleman. Right now, you do. Legally, you have to. You pay a lot of money to have a seat on the New York Stock Exchange so you can buy and sell stocks. But that's just an artificial construct.
It'd be like if you needed an agent to sell your thing on eBay. No, you just go to eBay and you sell it directly.
Okay.
It's a marketplace.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and if, God help me, NFTs.
So there is a good point, which I guess Kotari is making, which is people who couldn't or wouldn't buy stocks in the past because of commissions. And commissions used to be a lot higher than they are. All of this has pushed the commissions down anyway. And a lot of big brokers like Schwab now offer commission-free trading as a result, just to compete.
I was just going to mention, I don't know if commissions was the actual problem. I think it's easier now because you get to buy portions of shares.
Well, that's something they do. That's an interesting one too, right? Especially if a share's $1,000. And you have
it's $1,000 piece of I don't know, say Nike or whatever,
right.
Whatever.
Right.
And you average Joe probably can't afford it, but they want a piece of that pie and say, you know what, let me send $20 here and $20 there.
This is very elitist, but I'm not a big fan of people buying individual stocks. And it really comes down to that information disparity. You just,
I agree with you.
You as an individual,
they don't know.
You, and we don't have the information that institutional investors have. And that's who you're competing with.
And, I agree.
And so I think you're always
regular folks should look more into, well, I'm not going to say because that would sound like I'm giving advice. Never mind.
You can give advice. Just say, but I'm an idiot, so don't pay attention or something. That's what I say.
I think is more along the lines of looking at different funds.
Yeah, people look at index funds. Absolutely.
Diversity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, for investing in your retirement, I love the target date funds. Those do a pretty good job. They rebalance your portfolio as you get older to lower risk and all of that. But in any event, you know, that's always information is the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Remember what a great book by Michael Lewis, Flash Boys.
It's just so brilliant. Yeah.
And he talks about the rush, the race to create a fiber optic line from the Chicago Exchange to the New York Exchange. But fiber optics, speed of light, right? But
yep.
They were trying to create a path with a completely straight line because a turn makes it a little bit longer, and a millionth of a second difference with computerized trading can be the difference between winning and losing. So if you could get a completely straight, shortest distance between two points from the Chicago Board of Exchange to the New York Stock Exchange, or actually it's not the New York Stock Exchange anymore, as Michael Lewis pointed out, some place in some windowless building in New Jersey. But if you can get a straight shot, you might have a millionth of a second advantage over somebody else, which is enough for you to win. To make money.
So the characters at the beginning of the book are just great. They're literally going to people who own property to say, can I dig a hole here? And here's what it's worth to get the straightest line.
Yeah.
Which is to say that Bloomberg and Reuters and those companies do not sell content. They sell speed.
Yes.
And the former head of Reuters used to say that after the first 3 milliseconds, all of Reuters' content is an aftermarket.
And this also points out with something what I always have this debate that it isn't really about the quarterly report or you know, R&D or any of the numbers that we are always talking about. The value of the stock really is what somebody will pay for it. So having knowledge about what price people are paying a little early, it's like knowing who's going to win the race a little bit early. You can lay a bet on that horse a millisecond before it crosses the line. No, because it already crossed the line. A millisecond before anybody else knows it crossed the line. That was the whole premise of that Paul Newman, Robert Redford movie. What was it? It was a great con. It was Wire.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Is that they knew ahead of time who was going to win the race. So they lay a bet, and then the race results would come in a second later, and I won. It was the same scam. So you win in the stock market now, not
the sting.
You win in the stock market now, not because you've been reading the financials very carefully. Obviously, that's what the Wizard of Omaha does. But you know, Warren Buffett. But really, what's really happening is he's hyper fast stock trading, and it's come done very, very quickly, and it's done on information. And the only information that really matters is what people are going to pay for this stock a second from now. Yeah, it's
speculative.
It's fascinating. But it's also why I think individuals, I don't know. I'm not giving you advice either. I'm an idiot. But but it's what I tell my kids, because they have to listen to me, is you can't win that one. Because you're not an institutional investor. You don't have a fiber optic line to the Chicago Board of Trade.
That's right.
Somebody doesn't like me. It doesn't like this. Stop spreading false info, says Web4338. I don't know which particular
false info.
Yeah, tell me what's false and I'll tell everybody what you say. All transactions, including computer trades, have to go through a dealer. Didn't I say that? I think I said that.
Yeah, you said that.
Yeah, he did.
I was asking why that's the...
Right.
Theoretically, why that needs to be the case. Right. What value do they actually have?
Yeah.
But they extract value. Part of the point of this story is...
The middleman.
The middlemen, are, as always, are extracting value more than they're adding it.
He says, You are misinformed. It's explicit in Series 9 and 63 broker exams. Okay. I think you're making it up now. Now I think you're making it up. Anyway, the SEC takes it seriously. They're about to... SEC's Gary Gensler is expected to preview new market rules about a year after shares of GameStop and others shot up in the meme stock trading frenzy. It's not to make those illegal. It's to, and I knew when I launched this that it was going to take a lot of explaining, but it's to stop this payment on for order flow. And it is controversial because it does allow more people to get in the stock market. Which I would submit is something only, that maybe should be phrased as allow more suckers to get in the stock market. It's something only the guys, the institutional guys want. Yeah, yeah, we want more suckers.
More people in, it pushes their wallets bigger.
Yeah. Let's see, where are we time-wise? Let's take a little break. Should we do a change log?
This has been a long time. We haven't gone anywhere.
I know. We are stuck in the mud.
We're still in the top
very
of the rundown.
First section of the rundown. We will do a change log when we come back. Get some
and of course I have some nice TikTok things.
Oh,
oh boy.
Oh, how nice
of you. I know you all look forward
to
that.
Aren't you generous? Bless your heart. This episode brought to you by Melissa. Information, right? The quality of your data. That's the difference between winning and losing, not just in the stock market, but in business. Melissa says poor data quality can cost organizations an average of $15 million a year. And the longer poor quality data stays in your system, the more losses you can accumulate. Why does poor data cost you? Well, let's say you're sending bills to the wrong address or five catalogs to the same address. To ensure your business is successful, your customer information has got to be accurate. Melissa is a leading provider of global data quality and address management solutions. Oh, by the way, there's another side to getting good customer data. That's customer service. I mean, imagine you've got a phone call, you're dealing with a frustrated customer, and then you address them with the wrong name or say, oh, you live in Florida, right? And they live in Washington. And, oh, man, that can get awkward. Having the right information is pretty important. And for that, you need Melissa's Identity Solutions. Melissa's real-time identity verification service includes ID, identity, and document verification, age authentication, and global watchlist screening to establish the identity of a customer or satisfy your compliance requirements, anti-money laundering, things like that, KYC. Easily tailor the service to your specific sign-up process and risk management requirements to ensure fast onboarding or e-commerce checkout while protecting you against fraud. With Melissa, you'll reduce risk, you'll ensure compliance, and you keep customers happy. Now, that sounds like a win all around. Protect your data from decay, rot, corruption with 2.1 billion, billion with a B, clean, validated records. You'll be ensuring compliance in anti-money laundering, politically exposed persons, the Bank Secrecy Act. You can score and target customers with detailed demographic and firmographic data appends. You can complete customer records, add missing names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses. And don't worry, your data is safe with Melissa. They undergo continuous independent security audits to make sure their security is good, their privacy is good. That's why they can tell you they're SOC 2, HIPAA, and GDPR compliant. With Melissa, you can verify addresses, emails, phone numbers, names, and you can do it in real time in over 240 countries and territories. You can do it at the point of entry. They have on-prem solutions. They have SaaS solutions. You can do batch address cleaning by just uploading a file to their secure FTP servers and downloading the processed cleaned up list. You can do identity verification, geocoding, convert addresses into latitude and longitude. You can remove 95% of bad email addresses from your database. And of course, you can deploy it any way that suits your needs, your business size, your budget. On-prem, web service, secure FTP, software as a service, or Melissa's great API. They even have apps on iOS and Android, the lookups apps that will let you search addresses, names, and more at your fingertips. So bottom line is to make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. That's melissa.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. Let's do the change. Let's throw everybody off. Let's just knock them off.
Yeah, geez.
Yeah, knock them back on their heels. Yeah. It's time.
Google change log.
How exciting. I'm going to sell this one. You're going to feel
so
good.
We haven't done it for like this is a return to the change log. It's even bigger deal.
This is so exciting. Everything you're about to hear is going to change your life. Google Fi is expanding coverage on the Pixel with the Wi-Fi W Plus network. Remember Google Fi? And I'm a Fi customer, so actually this is meaningful to me. Fi always, his promise was, with the right hardware, your phone can use T-Mobile, Sprint, of course that's now merged, Wi-Fi, U.S. Cellular. Well, now there is something, this comes from Google's internal Area 120 incubator called Orion Wi-Fi. If you are a venue with Wi-Fi, you know, a coffee shop, a concert venue, a hotel, you can sell your Wi-Fi capacity to cellular networks. Google's calling this a W Plus network. And it is one more way that you can get bandwidth on your Google Fi phone. Google goes to businesses operating public areas, telling them you can get a new revenue stream from your existing network. There's no, you know, capture portal or anything. You just turn on Orion Wi-Fi monetization. Apparently, you don't even need a new router or new software. And then your Google Fi phone will automatically connect to Orion as a Wi-Fi thing. So I could walk into a coffee shop, not even get a pop-up that says, would you like to use our coffee shop? You don't need to know the password or anything. But the phone will know about it because they've signed up with Orion and your Fi phone will use it. I think that's a good idea. Kind of competes with Xfinity's, you know, Wi-Fi access points all over town thing. Cox does that. A few other cable companies
right,
do
right.
that.
Yeah. Right, right.
Beta number 3 for Android 13. I'm not touching it, not going anywhere near it. Very happy
Smart
with my
man.
Pixel 6 Plus on 12. Platform stability, that is a important landmark in the development of Android 13, which probably will come out this fall. You can hear all about it on All About Android.
It's good to hear that they said that keyword, just stabilization.
Stabilization.
It's just going to be great and solid. You don't have to give me all of these bells and whistles. Just make it work.
Platform stability. It means, it's really more meaningful to developers. It means, okay, we're not going to add anything that you don't know about. This API is fixed. It's done.
Yep.
And so now you can start writing your apps with confidence. You don't have to make any big changes. But it does. It's also a big step forward for 13. Tablet users can now join the public beta as well. You have to have one of the selected manufacturers.
Have we talked about the tablet market before on the Android side of things? Because it seems like iPad is just everywhere. When you hear tablet, they never say an Android tablet. It's always iPad. Like, is this something that should Google just let this go?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yes, Samsungs are nice, but when people say tablet, tablet is almost like the way Xerox was synonymous with making photocopies.
Yeah. Yes, I don't think, yes, you should not, well, I'm prejudiced. I think iPad is a tablet that is heads and shoulders above anything. I guess if you get the Samsung, that's a pretty good tablet. The problem isn't the Samsung. The hardware is great. The problem is the software in Android is just not good.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Should Google just let that go?
Well, you know what? That's what they announced at I.O. that they're, we're not going to make a tablet. No, don't go crazy here. But we really think tablets are great on Android. And so Android 13 does have some things. Task bars for tablets. It has some things that will make apps that are designed for a smaller screen scale better on a larger screen. That was one of the problems with tablets. Is a lot of Android apps would just be like a phone-sized on that tablet.
Yeah, a little like a little tiny window in there.
Yeah. So I think Google's...
Should we give them 2 years?
Well, they're making noises that they really want to make this work, so... I don't know. Put 13 on your tablet and see.
I dare you.
Again, my tablet that I have is not an Android tablet.
Yeah. Jason Howell, the host of All About Android, is our producer. He probably has an opinion on this. He says he's running 13. Are you running on a tablet, though, Jason? He says it's fine.
Okay, fine.
Fine. It's a fine-looking operating system. Android 12 beta ends with QPR 3, so that means I will be automatically unenrolled. I'll be normal again, which is nice because, you know, people were saying, oh, the June update is out for Pixels. And I go and I realize, oh, I'm on an Android 12 beta.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, it doesn't, that I'm not in the same cadence. So QPR 3 and the June Pixel feature drop launched today. You don't have to take any further actions. I won't. We are now, like, officially on just Android 12. And we don't have to do anything. After 3 months of testing, Android 12 QPR 3 with the June security patch is rolling out today. For those of you in the beta program, that means I'll get it tonight when I go home. And now we'll all be 12.1 for reals. Okay. Unless you went to 12L, right? Jason, then I don't know. It's so confusing, this 12 and 12L thing. Jason says, what tablet? I can't put it on a tablet. Jason, go out and buy a Samsung tablet on my dime.
Yeah, they're cheap.
Yeah, go out and get one.
Costco.
I ordered one when they announced it with the Note, or not the Note, the S22 Ultra. I bought an S22 Ultra, and I thought I bought it. Samsung Galaxy Note 8, was it? Whatever it is, the 8, the new one.
Mm-hmm.
But I, nothing ever arrived, so I guess I didn't.
Did you check your account, sir?
I can't still be waiting. I bought it at Best Buy. I should probably log in, shouldn't I? Now I just remembered that. You know, I do that sometimes. I buy something and I forget. I just figure, well, they'll send it to me, right? When the time comes, it'll be a surprise. And that has happened to me, especially with like Kickstarter. I'll buy something, and then like a year later, I got a piece of luggage, like this aluminum bag. I said, "What is this? What?
Oh, you ordered this a long time ago."
To keep you Thanks signed in, we need us. To confirm it's you. Well, I just logged in. What do you want? All right, I'll log in. Send me a verification code.
He thought he ordered it at Best Buy.
I thought I did.
You probably ordered it directly from the Samsung site or something instead. Dear luck.
Probably.
Wouldn't you email but
that's the first thing that comes in my head. Did I really buy it? Did they charge me for it?
My email's such a mess. Oh, yeah, good. They did send me a account. My email's such a mess that, I can. I bought a Mac Studio from a company in April, and I never heard. They charged me immediately $4,000. Never heard anything from them. I finally sent a note just the other day. I said, "Hey, you know, remember that Mac I bought? Where the hell is it?
Remember that Mac?
Where the hell is it?" And they said, "Oh yeah, thanks for the money, but we never got it." So they said, "You want your money back?" I said, yeah.
I want one of those things so bad.
I want my money back because you're not going to send me something, so I want my money back. So then they sent me a text message that said, your money's back, but I haven't seen it.
Oh, gosh. Jeez.
So how would I know? Oh, order status, right?
Right.
Oh. No, that's from February 2020. I guess maybe I didn't order it.
Dude.
Or not from there.
I don't know.
Your order history.
Order history. There ain't no
orders. What is it you supposedly ordered again?
When Samsung announced their new S22, they announced.
Well, can you search for S22 in your email and see if you got an order confirmation?
You're too reasonable and rational. Yes, I could do that. Meanwhile, June's Pixel feature drop.
Meanwhile, we move on through the.
I'm sorry I wasted your time going through my mail. At a glance, flashlight. What? And a doorbell alert and pocket operator music maker. You figure out what the hell that is, because I don't have, ain't nobody got time. So Nest doorbell video feed. Some of you have had this for a while. I do have a Nest Hello doorbell, so I should, so I'll see that on my at a glance settings. When your torch is on, written by a Brit. When your torch is on, at a glance will prominently note that and let you quickly turn it off with a tap if the blinding light doesn't give you a hint.
That's always one of the I enjoy telling somebody that their torch is on their phone when they don't know it. I think it's one of those little polite things you can do, and now they've taken this away from me.
So this is a common thing, like people are walking around.
It is for me.
People are walking around.
I do it a lot.
Like,
yeah,
exactly. With a big bright light in their pocket.
Yeah.
And they don't notice.
I do that a lot. I have to, when I take the dogs out in the evenings, I usually use that torch.
Well, that'll kill your battery.
And I totally forget about it.
Yeah,
totally forget about it.
So what do you, go up to them and you tap them on the shoulder, excuse me, sir, your torch is on.
And they're always grateful.
Oh, thank you so very much.
Because I say it nicely, not like, you're an idiot.
Hey,
you're going to lose your battery. I don't do that.
You know what? You're still going to have to do that, because how are they going to tell you your torch is on? With the at-a-glance settings. If you're looking at your phone, you probably know your light is on. It's
no,
things
you don't.
Like
no,
this.
I've seen people. No,
you
I've
don't.
Seen people working on
you
it,
don't.
And there it is.
Really? You're looking at your screen. You're not looking at the
right,
glow
exactly.
behind it. You can't see the glow behind it.
You
you're looking
glow?
At your screen.
Okay. All right. All right. So now you're going to have a notification that says, "Hey, dummy, your flashlight's on." And there will
don't
be
call me dummy. I'm Ant.
There will be air quality information index warnings for your area.
Good.
So it'll say, hey, have you noticed it's hard to breathe? Well, you're right. And then this pocket operator, this is actually very cool. I do know what this pocket operator is. I was just mocking. Do you know a company called Teenage Engineering? I actually bought one of these. They make little pocket synthesizers that are so cute and so much fun. Didn't I give mine to you, Jason? Do you have my pocket operator? He's a smooth operator. I didn't give it to you. Who did I give? I gave it to somebody. They're the cutest little things.
This dude, he can't find his pocket operator.
Well, the reason is I'm not a musician.
Order.
I thought this was really cute, but I'm not a musician. I shouldn't have one of these things. Anyway, they have now a software-based pocket operator music maker you can do on your Android phone. I'm sure you did this on All About Android. Oh, Jason already reviewed it. Nice. So pocket operator is very cool. Here's what it looks like. So it's just really a little kind of fun little synthesizer. You don't have to be an instrument, a musician to do it or anything. Google Wallet now will support vaccine cards, digital vaccine cards. There's a conversation mode and sound amplifier, which is actually kind of nice. You could use it as kind of a hearing aid, put the phone on the desk in between you, have your headphones on, and it's going to know to amplify just the voice and remove the background noise. You want to point your camera at the person you want to talk to. And a new trio of curated culture wallpapers from Jan Bastard. It's pronounced Bastard. Jan Bastard. Celebrating Pride Month. All right. He's French. He was born in Zaragoza, Spain. He now is in Rennes, France. It's pronounced Bathard. Bathard. Android Auto for phone screens officially dying for everyone.
It was never made any sense.
Yeah, I mean, Android Auto is still around. When I get in the car, I have Android Auto on my car screen. But why did you have Android Auto on your phone? Like, are you going to hold your phone here while you're driving? But,
well, if you had a car that wasn't available for you put it on, but all it really did was take features away because you're driving, fool.
Right. Which it should. Anyway, nobody used it. And now you'll get a little notice that says it's going to stop working soon. So it is.
Hey, it's Google. We kill things.
We know how to do it. Changelog includes things going away, too. $100 off on the Pixel 6 Pro. It's the first direct discount in the U.S. Google Store if you've been wanting to buy one of those. I know you had. Is it settled down for you, Ann, or are you still having problems with it?
It's not as much, but it's way better than what it used to be.
And
the Bluetooth
cameras
just toggle off here and there.
Yeah, but that's Bluetooth. I hate Bluetooth. I really do.
It's way better than what
and
it
the
used to
pictures
be.
Are great. And
that
right?
was within like the I think that was the March.
That was February. A big update that fixed a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
and do you ever take pictures with your Pixel 6?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It's really good.
The camera's fine.
Oh, it's a great camera.
It's totally fine.
Yeah, yeah. How do you like yours, Jeff? Your Pixel 6?
I like it. In fact, we have a family of groundhogs living under our garden shed. I looked over,
lovely.
And I'm far away. I'm sitting on the deck working. Yes, I was working on the deck. And I get up to go take a picture, get closer, and they skitter underneath. So I'm going to be far, far away, and I use the zoom in, and I get pictures of the groundhogs.
Got that reach now.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, it works well.
Very nice. And that's the Google Change Log. Google paying $100 million to Illinois residents. Illinois is one of the few states in the nation to have an anti-biometrics law, the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act. Google Photos allegedly violated it with its face recognition. And
oh boy.
Yeah. They've agreed to pay $100 million to settle a class action lawsuit. It was the face grouping
tool.
$2
a person?
Yeah, probably. You don't get, the lawyers is who gets the
lawyer
money.
Fees.
The
I think it's $300, yeah.
Oh, that's not bad. $300 is pretty good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. It alleges that the face grouping tool, which automatically identifies your face in photos and videos uploaded to Photos, violates BIPA. I can see why Google would do that, though, right? To let you know there's a picture of you up there. If you are or were an Illinois resident who appeared in a photo or video on Google Photos between May 1st, 2015 and April 25th, 2022, you have until September 24th of this year to submit a claim on the settlement's website. You'll get somewhere, as Jeff said, between $200 and $400, depending on court-related expenses and how many people file a claim. So there's a big pool. I probably shouldn't be mentioning this because, you're not going to get as much if the pool has a lot of members.
With your wild reach, yes, you're going to get millions more to apply for it.
Well, I don't live in Illinois. And I presume that Google isn't doing it anymore. So there you go. Why, Jeff, why should we care about this, the Taco Bell of the future?
I didn't put this one in there.
Oh,
But
it's kind of a brutalist Taco Bell, right? And you don't even see anybody. The food gets lowered in a pneumatic
bank.
I like that.
It's an old bank.
Oh, is it? Is it?
Yeah, that looks just like an old.
Oh,
bank.
Yeah, like the drive-through, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you order. You
tubes.
Have a QR code. You drive up. For all we know, there's robots upstairs making the food. You never see a human.
What happens when you said, I said no ice?
This is in Minnesota in Brooklyn Park. It's all QR code focused.
So I'm unhappy with Taco Bell right now.
Why?
Because they got rid of lemonade and they have like strawberry lemonade and it's treacly sweet and awful. So my normal order was two bean burritos, no onions, and the lemonade.
Here is Taco Bell. Here's Sly Stallone pulling up to a Taco Bell in the future. Wait a minute.
You do not realize that Taco Bell was the only restaurant to survive the franchise wars.
So?
Now all restaurants are Taco Bell.
All restaurants are Taco Bell? It looks just like the one in Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly.
All restaurants are Taco Bell. And all doors open sideways. And the piano guy sings the Jolly Green Giant song. So is the I never saw this movie. Is the premise that Sylvester Stallone is traveling in time and he's entered the future?
Well, there
you go. That, by the way, that groundbreaking new Taco Bell location will be opening tomorrow.
See, we're right on top of the news here. Nice. At the Twit Network.
Actually, it opened yesterday.
Nice.
No, well, okay. Counts close enough for us. All right, I got one I love, because you had two Dolly stories in here, but the one I really like is a thread of Kermit the Frog in every movie.
What is, explain Dolly. What is Dolly?
Dolly is artificial intelligence where you tell it to draw a picture of something and it will do that, and it may be something sensible or maybe something that will give you nightmares tonight, but you can have more. It's getting smarter and smarter and smarter.
So if you said, I want to see Kermit the Frog in Blade Runner 2049, you might get something like this.
Keep going through this thread. It's amazing.
Wow. If you said Kermit the Frog in The Matrix, you might get something like that. It kind of looks like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle now.
Does.
Kermit
does.
The Frog in Spirited Away 2001. He's got a big pot belly. Kermit the Frog in Star Wars.
This
look
is
at
perfect,
that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yoda-ish. Or
yeah.
Yeah.
Dolly, you're good. Avatar, The Last Airbender.
Just tons.
Wall-E. Wall-E from Dolly. The Princess Kaguya.
Skip a few of them,
the community.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, usually you'll keep trying until you get one that you really like, right?
Oh, well, exactly.
In The Family Guy, there's Kermit. This is good.
This
the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Right?
So I'm sorry if you're listening and you can't see these, but what can I say? I don't know. Just look for Dolly Kermit the Frog. You probably can find it. It's a Twitter thread. Yeah. Dolly's kind of cool.
D-A-L-L.
Dashy. Yeah. It's kind of cool. Mad Max.
Yeah, these are really good.
I don't understand how it knows The Dark Knight. Wow. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I like what it's doing to the eyes. Pan's Labyrinth?
Yeah. It's very like what you did to yourself and me last
yeah,
week.
Yeah, yeah. This is better than a Snapchat filter. Kermit the Frog in the Office. Very cool.
Yeah.
So good news for teenagers in California. The state of California has made a law. It goes into effect July 1st. That public high schools can start no earlier than 8:30 in the morning and middle schools no earlier than 8 a.m. It's long been observed that teenagers need to sleep more and their sleep cycles are shifted.
It makes perfect sense.
When I was a teenager, I'd go to bed at 1 every night and want to sleep till 11, 9 or 10, 11. Aunt, you have teenage boys, and I think there's a teenage girl living with you, too.
Yes, yes, but, dude... They're already like in school for an hour a day. Anyway,
that's awful.
Now it's just why even bother?
Well, the
now?
Hour should start them, later.
I tell them all the time they have it so good. They're never in class. Fortunately, they're doing well with their grades.
So they
your father used to have to walk to school 40 miles in the snow, so uphill.
Yes.
Are they
still
all the
on
way
Zoom
and uphill here? Coming home?
Are they still zooming?
No, sir. They were.
They do go into class. Yeah. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But school is out now. School.
Yeah, this doesn't count.
Week.
If you were unlucky enough to take zero period, because your boys were athletes, I bet you they did. You got to go in like at 7 a.m., right?
That's the thing. They get there, I believe it's 8 o'clock, and it starts at 8:15 or some crazy time like that. But then there's other days that it starts later.
Oh.
8:30.
Well,
and I'm like,
good news.
Wait a minute. Why are y'all starting so late?
It's gonna. Start any earlier than 8:30 starting July 1st.
And then they're done by 11 o'clock.
I think
really,
that's good.
Like done for the day by 11 o'clock.
Well, all right. Well, they have a weird. That's not normal. They have some weird. They're working. They're working the schedule or something. Time for a digital detox, friends. According to Axios, Jeff calls this moral panic.
Of course. How'd you know I did that? How'd you know I put that in there?
Deep down, you know the truth. You are hopelessly addicted to the phone or iPad or computer, writes Erica Pandy in Axios. You're reading the computer you're reading this on. It's like puffing 3 packs of cigarettes in the car, windows up, kids jammed in back. You know it's not great for you or them. Time for
stop.
A digital detox.
Just stop, Axios. Stop. You're and by the way, you're an online service, so stop. Just stop. It's not helpful. It's clickbait.
There are a lot of people going around making money, going on TV shows, saying, you know, this stuff's bad for you and
oh,
you're bad
yeah.
for your
a lot
kids
of,
and
A lot of moral panic entrepreneurs, they're called.
Oh, that's a... Mm-hmm. You made that up just now.
No, I didn't. No,
MPEs.
That's a term.
Okay. But there is some evidence that too much screen time is not good for you.
Well, again, I just... what's her
balance,
name? I'm suddenly blanking on her name.
Dana Boyd?
No.
Joan Donovan?
Give me a minute here. No. She's a journalist. She was at the Wall Street Journal.
Anne Hathaway?
She started the thing to do
Marilyn Monroe
Tech, and Craig Newmark funded her, and I should know her name. But anyway, she just did a piece last week.
Patty Hearst?
Stop.
Craig Newmark?
Well played, Jammer B.
She just did a piece last week saying, I thought I said this earlier on the show, the research said that the problem was time spent on screens, and that's not the problem, and it's really the activities that may be a problem, and all the research has to start all over again now.
You would probably stipulate this one. A Baylor University study found that screen time is ruining relationships as one partner feels phone snubbed by the other. We've all been in that situation. You're at the table, you're having a nice dinner, maybe you went to a fancy restaurant.
and your wife bursts
into flame. No,
they call it fubbing.
And your partner is fubbing?
Fubbing. Phone snubbing is called fubbing.
They're looking at the phone the whole time, or maybe they're taking pictures for their Instagram feed.
Or maybe
like
your
that.
Wife, is, as happens with me, is that, hey, look that up, will you? That happens to me all the time.
Actually, I say to Lisa, will you look that up for me?
Yeah, see?
There's a restaurant in the East Village of Manhattan that has boxes for you to stash your phones during the meal.
Oh, just screw me. Oh, jeez. just pay attention to your own lives and leave us alone, nanny.
Sushi jeez. Lounge in Hoboken, New Jersey. I can't imagine going to Hoboken for sushi, but okay. Tried Reconnect Tuesdays, which gave customers 20% off if they kept their phones locked away in a box for dinner. Anything to get people to go.
What
have sushi
difference is it to you, sushi place?
Yeah, really.
Do I eat your fish or not? And by the way, it takes a long time at a good sushi place for the sushi to arrive. So what are you gonna do?
They gotta make it.
I get the premise, but yeah, that's none of their business.
That's obnoxious. Yeah.
This is a silly, silly story, but anyway,
it really is.
Yeah,
but it's all about balance. That's the thing that no one seems to print. It's just have some balance. Have yourself some screen time. Yeah. Have yourself away from the screen.
Yeah,
they all just say put the phone down, get away from the screens. And
do you remember that Twitter survey you had us do, where it was tell you this world leader's, you know, he's a world leader, but he's saying stuff that's not true. Should you ban him? What would you do? Remember that?
Right.
And my gut feeling about it was. Twitter said, we want to get your advice on how to deal with this so we can change our policy for world leaders. But my gut was, it was more Twitter saying, see, this is so hard. You can't really blame us.
It's not education as one would think.
Well, it turns out they got 49,000 people taking that survey. They had said, we're going to take this feedback under advisement. More than a year since they announced the survey. They have done nothing.
Shocking.
Shocking.
Well, right now, let's give them a little
they're a little
slack
busy.
Because they're
busy.
Yeah,
they said consideration. They said consideration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Twitter spokesperson Trenton Kennedy would not comment on whether Elon Musk's pending acquisition has had an effect on efforts to revamp the world leader's policy. But he said the company
can't comment, right?
Yeah, well, they're working on it. He says they're still distilling the results of the survey. You ain't getting tequila, buddy, no matter how much you distill it. And considering next steps, during this process, we've also engaged experts, including NGOs, governments, academics, and civil society, to ensure we're hearing as many diverse and thoughtful perspectives as possible. Where do you go to get civil society? They have a phone number? What is he saying?
Lots of people will claim to be representing civil society.
Really?
Tons of organizations. Tons of organizations will.
But where do they get off? I represent civil society. Yeah. Like, how do you? I mean,
well, you go to a whole bunch of NGOs. Like, if you want to find out what's going on,
that I understand.
Human rights,
NGOs,
you go to
governments,
Human Rights Watch,
academics,
yeah. But that's civil society.
But who do you go to get civil society input? The Civil Society Incorporated.
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay.
More civil society entrepreneurs, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Civil Society Incorporated.
Anyway. They're not going to do anything. But they did make us do the survey, so. And we did it. And it was fun, and it was difficult, and it was educational. It showed you how hard it is, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing's first phone will come out July 12th. I'm sure Jason and company talked about this yesterday on All About Android. So Carl Pei, who was the founder of OnePlus and kind of famous marketing nutball, but made some pretty darn good phones in his time. He left OnePlus and he started OnePlus went and merged with its parent company, Oppo, and he started a new company called Nothing. Okay.
What branding, sure.
We weren't really sure what Nothing was up to, but it turns out Nothing is going to release a phone, the Nothing phone. It's our first smartphone and our most important product, Nothing said in its announcement. The real start of Nothing's journey to make tech fun again and an invitation to unlearn everything the industry has taught us. Have we learned nothing? The phone... they were showing it off at Mobile World Congress, so we kind of had a thought they might be doing this. Phone will be powered by Qualcomm, a Snapdragon. It will run Nothing OS, very lightweight. A modified version of Android, the company says, captures the best features of the OS and distills it to just the essentials. Essential. Wasn't that another phone company?
That was another phone.
Yeah, that went out of business. Andy Rubin's Essential. Oh, yeah. The platforms. Right. This sounds a lot like that, by the way. Andy Rubin leaves Google. He's the guy who invented Android. Going to start a company. This is going to be so exciting. I bought an Essential phone.
Yep.
That's it.
The platform's golden parachute, though.
Yeah. Oh, he did all right. Yeah. The platform's interface will feature bespoke fonts, colors, design elements, and sounds as well. Sounds like they got Johnny Ive under the hood there. Live event in London, live streamed on the website. You know what? Jury's still out. Could be great. It just worries me. It reminds me a lot of the Essential phone, which I did buy. Didn't I give it to you, Ann? Who did I give that to?
No.
Somebody.
Not me, sir.
Yeah. I should mention Passkey real quickly. This is something Apple talked about Monday at its WWDC event, making it a complete hat trick because Microsoft's been talking about it and Google's been talking about it. This will kill the password. Hallelujah. It'll come with iOS 16 and macOS Ventura. The idea is that you will log in to your phone, proving you are you, and then from then on, whenever you go to a website, it'll just say, oh, hi, Leo, and let you right in. No more passwords. It's more secure. It's phishing-proof.
Because your phone is linked to your computer.
Yeah. Well, because also your phone has fingerprint or face ID, and so it really is using biometrics to ascertain that you are you.
And if somebody steals your phone,
they can't unlock it. Right? Oh, okay. That's the theory. Well, they can't even unlock it. It's a new digital key tied to your biometrics. To create a passkey, use Touch ID or Face ID to authenticate on a website, and you're done. And from then on, when you log into the site again, passkeys allow you to prove who you are by using your biometrics, Face ID, fingerprint. You don't have to type in a passphrase. This could be huge.
I guess if you try to use your fingerprint on the phone so many times and it fails to read it, it usually forces you to put in your passphrase.
Yeah.
Right?
So then you would have to use a passphrase.
If you have to do that, I guess there's some signal that says, okay, this phone was unlocked, but it wasn't unlocked with biometrics.
No, so I don't. No. If you can unlock it, I'm sure that counts.
I was curious.
But what happens, you go to that site, it then says, let's see you. Oh, yeah, good, that's you. So you're still gonna do the biometrics each time, it sounds
still
like.
Still got to do it.
Okay, Steve Gibson raised the issue oh, well, that's all well and good, but what will happen if you decide I don't want to use an iPhone, I want to use an Android phone? Can you export that, or do you have to start over?
Oh.
Apple's, I'm told by one of our listeners that Apple did address this at WWDC later yesterday and said there will be a way to export your passkeys from your iCloud. It's stored in iCloud. So if you can export it and import it somewhere else. And it is an industry-wide standard. It's the FIDO Alliance. So that may be the most important thing Apple announced on Monday. I mean, they was just in passing, but that's huge, right?
Is there anything to stop Google Android from doing the same thing?
No, Google's already said they're going to do it. And Microsoft has said they're going to do it. So you got the big three.
Oh,
that's why it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Let's see. Good article in Tech Dirt today about the new mayor. Your new mayor. Well, he's not your mayor, is he?
Well, he kind of is.
You work in New York.
Yes, he is, because I'm in a city employee. So yes,
oh yeah,
he is.
Eric Adams, mayor of New York City, has paused the city's affordable broadband plan. They had planned, the city had done a lot of research. They had planned to spend $2.1 billion to make sure everybody in New York had access, inexpensive access, to high-speed internet, saving on average a customer $40 a month. It would expand internet access to 1.2 million households in New York City. Carl Bode, writing in Tech Dirt, makes the probable accurate assumption that it was the phone companies like Verizon who got to the city and said, oh, you know, you don't want to compete with us, do you? That's why, that's the argument against all municipal Wi-Fi.
Yep. Philadelphia went through that years ago.
You don't want to compete with us, do you? Verizon, of course, has not, you know, been a very good incumbent in New York City.
There were stories, supposedly the last payphone was hauled out of New York.
Yeah, we did that last week. Yeah.
But then it turns out there's more payphones still around. So.
Yeah, they're just not owned by the city. Yeah, it's kind of a shame. This was, I think, an historic plan, but the phone companies don't like it when you compete with them. So, never mind. You like those scooters? Bird is laying off almost a quarter of its staff. Meanwhile, electric scooters are getting a second chance in some cities.
Says the New York Times.
And the New York Times is on it. I remember when the first Bird scooters showed up in San Francisco. They littered.
They were strewn everywhere.
They were strewn everywhere. You would trip over them.
I went to the Facebook F8 in San Jose, and they were just there. I know they got run over three times. They were thick there.
Yeah. So, you know, that's why I think companies are struggling a little bit. But apparently the New York Times says, we rented scooters in L.A., in Santa Monica, and it had a no-go zone. So you go, you ride your scooter up to the beach area, the boardwalk, and it just stopped. So you can't go.
Wow.
There. Yeah.
They geofenced the
software. They geofenced it off.
Wow. They literally fenced it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chicago, among the places that have required people to lock scooters to bike racks or other fixed objects instead of just lying them on the ground. New York has pledged dedicated lanes and parking zones for scooters. I don't know. I think there are people who love scooters, people who, you know, we shouldn't have to have a car to get around a city. We do have mass transit, but a lot of cities don't have great mass transit, including L.A.
Nope.
So,
but I like LA, the scooters in the city.
Yeah,
L.A. distances don't work with a scooter.
That's true. You can't. Yeah,
we go from Pasadena to Santa Monica.
No,
it doesn't work on a scooter.
Work.
Now that's different. Yeah. I only use it in downtown.
Or San Francisco.
To Adobe Max.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Hills. No, I've ridden scooters around the city. Yeah. I mean, I feel dopey riding a scooter at my age.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It's not a good
look. I would totally do it now, considering it's almost $7 a gallon here.
So. That's true.
I've almost told the hardheads that old dad might be on that scooter, but they're lucky I'm a little too heavy for him. Just a little.
Can I do a number, Jeff?
Sure. I think I know which one it is you're going to do. It's a perfect number, yes.
You probably do know this.
I have others.
You have others? I don't want to steal, yes, you know, if others. It's a valuable number for you. A Google employee named Emma Haruka has calculated pi to the 100 trillionth digit, farther than any human before. 100 trillionth. And by the way, it's a little disappointing. She got the computer ran for months, finally got to the 100th trillionth digit, and you know what it was? Zero. Please.
Well, that doesn't count, right?
No, it counts because there's something after it. If there were nothing after it, maybe not.
Oh, okay.
But is it possible
that you get to the end?
Is it possible that you could get to the end of the 200 trillionth?
No.
We actually solve pi?
No.
How do we know that you can't?
It's an irrational number. How do we know? Okay, that's a good question. How do we know that pi is irrational? That's an infinitely repeating number. I think we do. I think somebody proved it. But I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not a mathematician.
Yeah. I'm not either.
They did sort of...
I suspect someone in the chat will tell us.
Somebody in the chat said, did they check her work? Yes, they sort of did. They spot checked it by checking some of the digits prior to the... Obviously, you can't check the final digit. She had, in 2019, calculated 31 trillion digits, which was a record at the time. Pi has been
20% time.
My personal passion. Proof that pi is irrational. There it is. Thank you. It was proven in the 1700s, says Jammer B.
I didn't say that.
Okay. Wikipedia says it. It was proven in the 1700s. 1700s that pi is irrational. This is interesting. Google will not say how much it cost. It is a demo, obviously, of Google's compute engine. That's what she used. Listen to how much computation, though. It took 157 days, 128 virtual processors, 864 gigabytes of memory, and here's my number of the week, 82,000 terabytes of data, which is the same amount of storage as 2,598 years worth of HD movies.
Oh, jeez.
Who does HD anymore? Let's get an up-to-date number, Google.
All right, so now if you put every number on top of each other in 12-point type, it would reach
how far
where?
Would it reach? And wow, did the calculation using a freely available program called YCruncher. Worked with its creator, Alexander Yee, to verify the result is correct. Also used an algorithm that makes it possible to generate specific digits of pi without knowing the previous ones, letting you verify that some of the final digits are correct. So she did check her work. Wow. And Google said, go ahead and do it. It's a great ad for Google Cloud Compute. She's a developer advocate. She loves pi. What do you think about this? I don't know enough about it, Jeff, to have an opinion. There's a YouTuber, Jordan Shanks. He's a comedian in Australia who's been posting videos critical of the former Deputy Premier of New South Wales, John Barilaro, who sued and...
didn't sue the comedian.
He sued Google.
Sued deep-pocketed Google.
Because a comic probably has no money. Saying, you should have taken this down. He won. Federal Court Justice Stephen Rares in Australia ruled that Barilaro had been left traumatized by a campaign of relentless cyberbullying by Jordan Shanks. He uses the on-screen name of Friendly Geordies. Google had failed to adhere to its own policies by doing nothing to prevent Mr. Shanks' hate speech, cyberbullying, and harassment, ordered Google to pay $715,000, a figure which could rise if a costs order is made against the tech company. So that's just punitive damages, I guess.
So it worries me. In the U.S. right now, we'd be protected against that to an extent, we would believe, with Sullivan case, which says you have, if you're a public figure, you have to show actual malice and so on and so forth. But look at the Johnny Depp Amber Heard case, where they determined actual malice to the tune of $12 million, or I guess the punitive was $10 million, whatever it was a lot of money. And now there's a Guardian story saying that Google may not have to pay because U.S. law would be ruling in some cases here. I don't understand how that works. I don't get that. But the fear is you have in the U.S., you have Justice Thomas has been shooting scuds across the bow of Sullivan again and again and again, because the right wing wants to punish big media and make that. What's the right wing doing now? Whether it's abortion or anything else, they want to let loose the dogs of lawyers on people as a way to chill a criticism. And so I fear that this will be a preview of losing Sullivan in the U.S. And if politicians can sue, and even if they don't win, right, it's slap stuff, even if they just take you to court and the lawyers cost you a fortune, if their cases are not thrown out because they sue critics, oh, man, we're even more doomed than we already are.
Yeah, this is a good case for us because it's Australian. We don't know what the politics of it are, what the Barry Lauro's politics are, what Friendly Geordie's was up to. He accused Barry Lauro of lying to an anti-corruption committee conducting an extramarital affair. Barry Lauro did sue the comedian, who settled in November of last year.
That's right. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Provided an apology and edited the videos. So he went after Google after he went after the comedian. In a scathing judgment, the judge said Shanks had run a relentless cyberbullying campaign against Barry Lauro, which caused him to leave public office prematurely. Now, I don't know. Maybe the guy was a horrific troll.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know.
But when you protect speech, you protect the worst of it. That's our...
But it does sound malicious. I mean, it sounds like it could have been malicious.
Might have been. And he might well have lost in the U.S. courts. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm being more generic in my worry.
Yeah, interesting case.
Yeah.
Maybe some of our Australian listeners will explain. Maybe there's probably a lot more when they get up. There's a lot more to this that we don't know about.
You want to look at the trippiest tech glitch ever, line 159.
We can wrap this up with the trippiest.
Oh, wrap up already?
Yeah, we're already.
Well, I guess we have some.
It's time. Time for Cacio e Pepe. It's Cacio e Pepe time. So this is a conference?
Yeah.
And there's something.
It's like a TriCaster.
Yeah, I can make this happen right now, right here.
Right.
So there's really only four people on stage, but there's something went wrong with the screen. And I hope you're not an epileptic, because that's seizure material. That's terrible.
So it's doing video feedback, basically.
Yeah.
For those who aren't on.
Should we give a warning?
Oh, I saw that. Maybe cut it out at this point.
Sorry. I hope it didn't. Yeah. Let's take a break. Come back. Picks of the week. Items of the week. That kind of thing. Our show today brought to you by Hover. Is that right? Hover? Yes. Oh, I love Hover. Love them. Hover is my domain registrar. I should explain. This is where I get my domains, and I love it. Anytime I get a good idea for a domain. Actually, I think anybody around here, Mike, I know, ran off and registered a domain in the middle of one of our broadcasts once. I remember during iOS Today. People everywhere around Twit are registering domains at Hover. Why do we like Hover? Because they're great. They're simple. They're not fancy. They don't make you go through 8 pages of other things you could buy from them. For instance, when you buy a domain name at Hover, you get Whois privacy built in. You don't have to pay extra for that, because when you register a domain name, your name, address, and phone number are public information. So you want to have Whois privacy. They know that. So they just provide it. If you are, this is a campaign I've been on lately in the radio show. If you live on email, if email is important to you, I get so many calls on the radio show from people who say, I can't get in my email account. I had one woman who something went wrong with her Gmail account. She went down to the Gmail office in Irvine and banged on the door. And I said, did that help? She said, no. Nobody's going to fix it because it's free. I get people saying my AOL account's not working anymore, my Yahoo account. If email's important to you, you should pay for it. Now, the good news is with Hover, you don't have to pay a lot. Plus, your email is not some, Gmail at gmail.com or at yahoo.com. It's your domain name. It could be your family name, your business name, your nickname, your handle, whatever you want it to be. So it's really personal. if you're a pizza parlor, you can get, you know, Gino's Pizza, Gino's.pizza, and have email Gino at Gino's.pizza. I mean, that wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be great? Hover can tie your domain name to your email so that when it renews, your domain renews, your mailbox renews. It's a no-brainer solution for business owners. You really need to have your business name and your email address. Easy to set up. You can add as many mailboxes to your domain as you need. And it's, you know, it works with web. If you want to use your web or any email app, it's IMAP, a real IMAP email, and they have a web interface. I think Hover Email is a great solution for people who are struggling with their email. But there's so much more you could do with your own domain name. You got a blog? Well, you got to have your own hosting name, right? You got a portfolio or an artist, a photographer? Definitely. I have leo.camera for my pictures. Building an online store? Yes, I got it at Hover. Of course I did. Maybe you just want to make a more memorable redirect to your LinkedIn page. Looking for work? You know, hireme.com, something like that. The prices are great, too. Very affordable. You get pro-level tools. If you are an expert in DNS, I do all my own DNS at hover.com, but they also have Hover Connect, which works with many services. You just a couple of clicks and you're connected, so your website goes to your new domain. It's private, it's secure, it's fast, it's easy, and at Hover, you are a customer, not a source of data. So take back control of your data with reliable, tracker-free email from Hover. And a domain name from Hover. I own dozens of domain names. Look at all the TLDs now. Finance, financial, fish. Leo.fish. Fishing. Fun. I do have Lotl Fun. LOTL.FUN. I do have that. I love that. So just go on and on and on. When I was going to do a podcast called Leo on the Line, LOTL, I immediately, you know, anytime I have an idea, I register the domain name. And at Hover, it's affordable, it's easy. Auto-renew makes it simple, and it's completely secure and private. Plus, you get email. At Hover, you're not a source of data. You are their customer. Great support and great people. Hover.com/twit. Whether you're a developer, photographer, small business, Hover has something for you to expand your projects and get the visibility you want. Go to hover.com/twit. Right now, make sure you do that so they know you saw it here, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the whole first year. Hover, hover.com/twit, 10% off your domain extension for a full year. Thank you, Hover, for your support. Gumby says, so cacio e pepe is macaroni and cheese for rich people?
Grown-ups.
Grown-ups.
For grown-ups.
I like mac and cheese.
That's really funny.
Yeah. And, you know, there are lots of grown-up mac and cheeses. We have lobster mac and cheese, all kinds of mac and cheeses. Yeah. Let's do your thing, Ant. You got something for us? We always end with you. We should start with you for a change.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Hold on. I got to
track and field time.
Go to my whacking. Yeah, this is track and field national championships. That's on my brain because... Well, of course, I'm a Clemson fan, so there's a lot of Clemson kids that qualify for the Nationals. And then it's in Eugene, Oregon, where Hardhead is aspiring to go one day and be an Oregon Duck and be an Olympian. And
oh.
Folks that are interested in track and field, check it out.
Both your sons are really good runners, aren't they?
Yeah, they do all right.
But he's a proud papa. Don't let him fool you. That's awesome.
They do all right.
That's great.
I got to keep them humble. But yeah,
can you stream
today.
Them?
They will be streaming at 4:30 Pacific as of right. Yeah, actually, right now they should be streaming on ESPNU, I believe.
Oh, good.
If you have that subscription, so
nice.
Yeah, check that out. My next one. This was sent to me from one of my friends. She said she wanted to send it out to all of the people of color she knows, and I thought it was interesting, and it's called Turn Signal. And actually, I wanted to ask y'all about this, too, just to get your perspective. It's basically an app that's going to allow you to connect with a lawyer when you get into a traffic stop.
Oh,
so
my God.
So if you get pulled over.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You fire it up, and it allows you to connect to a lawyer to be right there during
Officer,
the traffic
stop. Officer, I have my attorney here with me.
Wow.
And it's not free. It's like $60 a year, but they also offer, I guess you can say a scholarship, if you will, for people that are under a certain income bracket to get it for free for a year. I want to say the folks in Brooklyn are getting it for free. It started by the whole team is all black dudes. The CEO is a black dude, and they put this thing together. And I thought it was an interesting idea. But the first thing that popped in my head is an experience that I had several years ago at CES. I was in a Lyft, and the Lyft driver was being idiotic on the streets, and we got pulled over. Okay. So when we got pulled over, my first instinct is I need to have my phone open and recording, because this could have been really, really bad, because he was swerving and just being idiotic on the streets. So I had my phone out and had it recorded just to protect myself and just human nature. The police officers, they came up and they were quite belligerent about my phone. And I told them, look, I'm just trying to make sure I don't get into any type of mess that I can't prove, you know. And I'm thinking,
you were well within
your
rights.
Like this, right. So I'm thinking, if I had an app like this, does this make the police officers more belligerent?
I guarantee you.
Oh, yeah.
Having a lawyer on the line. On the other hand, if they're intelligent,
right,
they might have to moderate their belligerence a little bit because you got your lawyer on the line.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends what your experience has been up to now, you know?
Right. I thought it was a good idea, but at the same time, that was the first thing that popped in my head when it was shared with me, was how those cops were yelling
at me. That's how they get you.
Having my phone out.
That's how they
get
you.
I need to see your hands. That's what they kept saying. I need to see your hands, sir. And both of them came over to my window. I'm in the back seat.
And you're not driving.
I'm not even driving. But they came over to my window and said, I need to see your hands. So,
but couldn't they see him when you were holding up the phone to video them? Sure, officer, see? These are my hands. This is intimidation. It is in almost every jurisdiction that I know of, it's absolutely legal to record officers in public.
And they mentioned that inside of the app. They mentioned that on their website, the Turn Signal website. Right now, they're only available in like 5 states at the moment, because it's fairly new, and it's Minnesota.
Plus, where you're allowed to practice law is an issue too.
Yeah, that's probably why. Yeah.
They probably need lawyers in various states to make it work.
What a good idea.
So they're working on the rollout.
It is a great idea.
Turn signal without an A. Turn signal
without an A.
There's a guy on TikTok who, a white guy, a black guy would not get away with this. He constantly, it appears to be the whole count, I forget the count name, but he goes and he's recording cops. And they always get pissed, or they always do, but every time he shows it, they're getting pissed off and asking for his identification. And he just quotes the law to them and says, unless you have cause for me saying that I've broken the law, no. And he hangs
Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment.
He won't give up.
It's scary, yeah.
But it is scary.
I was very proud of Henry. I've told this story before. When he was in college, there was a protest going on, and he went out to take pictures of it, I think for the campus newspaper. And the police sat him down and said, give me the camera. I want to erase that. And he said, no, I have the right to take these pictures. This is protected activity. I'm news gathering. And the police made him sit there and cool his heels for quite a while, but they did not take his camera, and he ended up going home with those pictures. They will intimidate the hell out of you. You know what? If I were black, I'd be very nervous that they might do more, to be honest.
Pardon the expression, but my hands were tied. I was in the back of that car. My driver was I guess he was Middle Eastern.
Did they arrest him?
No, they didn't.
Just wrote him a ticket?
We were there for quite a bit, and it was the two police officers were there in camo.
The Vegas, Vegas police are scary, but I think they kind of have to be.
They have to be. I get it.
to be honest, they have a job to do. Yeah.
But at the same time,
the driver was not driving well. So if they had listened to you, you probably would have been agreeing with the cops.
I was. That's the whole
point. That's
but
the weird
the
part of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, it was like, no, we need to see your hands.
put the wish phone they, down, I put can your understand why they
on the headrest.
Yeah, they didn't want you recording.
I need to have my hands on the headrest.
There's been, of course, a lot of cases where police will play popular music, hoping that you can't post this video because there'll be a takedown.
Yeah.
It's actually, I think Congress is considering a law against that.
Mm-hmm.
Look, there are plenty of good cops, and I don't think the world would be very good without police. But at the same time, if you're
I'm
a
not
cop,
one to sit here and say defund police. No. You'll never hear me
if
say that.
If you're a good
That's
cop,
stupid.
You shouldn't. You know, this is you're doing your duty, and it is our right as citizens to record that, and that's the law. Wow.
But yeah, I wanted to run that by you guys just to.
That's really interesting. Good find.
We have a shortcut I've showed on the air that somebody wrote for if you're getting pulled over that does a whole bunch of things, says I'm being pulled over, sends messages to family and friends I'm being pulled over, starts recording audio of the interaction, which is not as obvious.
All right.
And
sorry.
Plays a laugh track during the entire interaction, which usually diffuses the situation. Finally, let's order a print from Ant. Oh, is that pretty?
Yeah, lastly, order a print. Antpro.com/prints. And
that's
and,
gorgeous.
Help me pay for these hardhead schools.
Oh, it's lovely.
School bills.
We do pay Ant a salary. I'm not.
They do. They do. They
He's
do.
Not working for free, but I agree. No. We want to support you in every way possible. And he has such great photography. And you know what? What an opportunity to get some beautiful art on your walls. So I agree.
Yep.
100%.
Thank you, sir.
Ooh, I want to get this peaceful sunset in the park. That's pretty.
Ooh, that's lovely.
That's actually nice. Sonoma County.
Yeah, I believe it. I've seen it. Yep. Beautiful. It's a good place to take pictures, isn't it? Ooh, the Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah. Lots of good images.
The most popular one is there's a plane. It's called Sunset Flight. That's probably the most popular one.
That's gorgeous, too. Very nice. FineArtAmerica.com. You can just search for Ant Pruitt. You will find a gallery.
AntPruitt.com/prints.
Oh, yeah. Just go to his website. There you go. You went to Hover, obviously. Thank you, Ant.
Thank you, sir.
A number, Mr. Jarvis?
I've got a one that'll take longer, and plus Stacey will probably want to yell at me, so I'll hold the off-com till next week. Have you seen the video of from the Jubilee of the "Oh, you must have met the Queen" video?
Oh, there are so many good videos from the Jubilee. This isn't the one with Paddington the Bear?
No.
Oh, I want to show this one too. Okay, we'll show this first.
Play this. This was no music in it, so you're safe. It's lovely.
And normally on these picnic sites, you meet nobody. But there was two hikers coming towards us.
Oh, we should mention, by the way, that this is Queen Elizabeth's Jubilee year, 75 years on the throne. 70 years on the throne, which is longer than any monarch ever. Yes, I think. Yeah.
Platinum something.
We know.
Is that what they called it? Platinum.
Yeah, Platinum Jubilee. So here
this is one of her protection guys.
And normally on these picnic sites, you meet nobody. But there was two hikers coming towards us, and the Queen would always stop and say hello. And it was two Americans on a walking holiday. And it was clear from the moment that we first stopped, they hadn't recognized the Queen, which is fine. And the American gentleman was telling the Queen where he came from, where they were going to next, and where they'd been to in Britain. And I could see it coming, and sure enough, he said to Her Majesty, "And where do you live?" And she said, "Well, I live in London, but I've got a holiday home just the other side of the hills." And he said, "Well, how often have you been coming up here?" "Oh," she said, "I've been coming up here ever since I was a little girl, so over 80 years. And you can see the clogs thinking. He said, "Well, if you've been coming up here for 80 years, you must have met the Queen." And as quick as a flash, says, "Well, I haven't. The Dick here meets her regularly." So the guy said to me, "Well, you've met the Queen. What's she like?" And because I was with her a long time and I knew I could pull a leg, I said, "Oh, she can be very cantankerous at times, but she's got a lovely sense of humour." Anyway, the next thing I knew, this guy comes around, puts his arm around my shoulder, and before I could see what was happening, he gets his camera, gives it to the Queen, and says, "Can you take a picture of
Oh, my God.
Anyway, we swapped places, and I took a picture of them with the Queen, and we never let on, and we waved goodbye, And in a match, he said to me, I'd love to be a fly on the wall when he shows those photographs to the friends in America.
Oh, can you imagine?
And hopefully someone tells
me. Can you imagine? All right, I've got it. Now that you've said this, I have to show you Queen Elizabeth taking tea with Paddington. Do you think there are people who haven't seen it? I mean, is it worth playing?
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
Good. Anne is our everyman. She recorded this at Buckingham Palace, kept it secret from her family for a month because it had to be, obviously... This is not easy
to record, too, because you're recording to a blank space.
Yeah, she's not actually talking to anybody. Here, let me play. It's on YouTube if you want to see it all. And there is music in this, but I think it's royal music, so I think we're probably okay. Her butler is getting the tea with the royal cozy, which looks like a crown, and taking a very long walk through Buckingham Palace.
Well, I mean, it is the palace.
It is. Yeah, it's quite a beautiful beautiful stroll he's taking.
The tea's going to get cold by the time he gets
there. Now you know why they need a crown cozy. And there's some eclairs.
I do hope you're having a lovely jubilee.
That's Paddington.
Tea? Oh, yes, please.
He's drinking it out of the pot. Oh, boy.
The butler says,
No, put the pot down. So Paddington does, but unfortunately... He pours the queen a drop. That's all that's left.
Never mind.
And then he puts it down on the eclairs. Or his hand, and he squirts the butler. Oh. The queen is just
The queen
lovely.
Is amused.
She's very lovely.
Perhaps you would like a marmalade sandwich. I always keep one for emergencies.
In his hat.
So do I.
In her purse.
I keep mine in here.
This is the best.
For later.
But this is the very best part. They open the window. And this was shown on the screen to these people as they're cheering.
The party is about to start, Your Majesty.
Happy Jubilee, men. And thank you for everything.
That's very kind.
Aww. Oh. You Brits are lucky. What do we got? And by the way, that drum line. Watch this drum line. They're going to play We Will Rock You. Watch this. And she's playing the cup alongside.
Wow.
It's a heck of a drum line.
Delight show. Dude, I love snare drum.
Oh, man. Platinum Jubilee. Representing the people who have rebelled against you,
yeah,
and went our own way.
And even though some are trying to bring back,
we want our own monarchy.
Right now, that we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, but we certainly do appreciate her as quite a monarch.
Pretty cool,
monarch. Isn't that sweet? Thank you, Aunt Pruitt. Hands-on photography. Twit.tv/hop. What's coming up?
Well, this week we're going to sort of rehash a previous conversation about printing photos, but we're going to talk about selling your photos.
Oh,
so check well, we us just, out, twit.tv/hop.
Just did a little of that, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Got a hint.
It did. Excellent. Twit.tv/hop. Jeff Jarvis is...
Wait a minute.
Oh, well. Why do I put this away? The director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Great to have you. BuzzMachine.com. Ant is going to be busy for the next few weeks because he is also community manager at Club Twit. And the book club, Stacy's book club, is a week from now. If Stacy can't make it back from Puerto Rico, I'll do it because I've been reading it and I'm loving this. It's Neal Stephenson's latest
Neal Stephenson.
Termination Shock. And I know, Ant, you hated it, so I'll take over. John and I are reading it. I'm not finished. I've only got 6 days to read 12 hours, so I've got to get through about it. Listen to 12
it's
hours.
Helped me to stay away from that book because it made me angry quite
what
a bit.
What so, angered yeah. you?
I just see privilege, man. Just, oh. Okay. I go.
It does start with the Queen of the Netherlands, yeah.
Netherlands, yeah. I go down the road to buy gasoline for the car and seeing that it's, you know, damn near $7 a gallon, and then there's these homeless people next to me, and all of that is while I have my audiobook playing in my ear. And these people are
wow.
talking about having tea and sulfur and just it's like, nah, dude, this, I need to turn this off because I'm getting angry.
Okay. Well, in that case, I better host this book club. It's 9 a.m. June 16th. We'll let the commies stay out of it. No, that you can join. Fun. You could join and give us your point of view. There, you're going to do, you. This was your idea to do a members fireside chat on July 7th. That's kind of neat. That'll be fun. And then, of course, Alex Lindsay has an Ask Me Anything coming up July 14th. These are events we do inside our Discord. Club Twit is really three benefits. Ad-free versions of all the shows we do, because you asked us for that. No tracking, no ads, nothing. You also get access to the Discord, which has shows that we don't, you know, put out publicly, like our Untitled Linux show, the Stacey's Book Club, the Giz Fizz. It also has conversations about all kinds of things geeks love. And as I mentioned, because you're paying $7, the conversations are always good. Great people in there. And you get the Twit Plus feed where stuff that we talk about before and after the shows and other places shows up. So you get a lot of benefit, I think, for a mere $7 a month. That's it. Twit.tv/ClubTwit. We'd love to have you be in the club. Come on now, man. Join us in the club.
So members in the Discord, I know I don't do the DMs a lot because there's no way I can keep up with them, but don't be surprised if you get a DM from me asking about a sit down.
Good.
I want to do these hangouts with you all. So.
Yeah, thank you, Ann. And we do have a dedicated Minecraft server, two of them actually, for Discord, and it went down. I didn't realize this when our power went out on Sunday. Of course, the Minecraft server went down too, so I have fixed it, rebooted it. It's all running fine. Go on in there if you're a member of Club Twit, or if you're not yet whitelisted in there, go to the Let's Play section of Club Twit, and I will add your name to the list. We do really, it's having a lot of fun in those Minecraft servers as well. Club Twit, thank you everybody for participating. We do This Week in Google every Wednesday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. Join us live if you wish. We have audio and video streams at live.twit.tv. We also have a live chat room at irc.twit.tv that's open to all, like the Discord chat room, but this one's open to all. We also have free versions of the show available, ad-supported, at twit.tv/twig. There's a YouTube channel, ad supported. You can, it's actually a good place if you want to share a bit of the show with somebody. Just you can snip a little bit at the on the YouTube channel and send that off. And of course, the best way to get it probably is subscribe, because it is a podcast and you can get it automatically the minute it's available. Pick up a podcast player and search for This Week in Google, subscribe, and if that player has reviews, please leave us a nice review. 5 stars. We'd appreciate it. Thank you. That's it for This Week in Google for this week. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Don't miss All About Android every week. We talk about the latest news, hardware, apps, and now all the developer-y goodness happening in the Android ecosystem. I'm Jason Howell, also joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and our newest co-host on the panel, Wen Tu Dao, who brings her developer chops. Really great stuff. We also invite people from all over the Android ecosystem to talk about this mobile platform we love so much. Join us every Tuesday, All About Android on twit.tv.